Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the April 7th, 2015 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I wonder if you'd please stand with me, and I'll lead the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Ms. Kiefer?
She's, I see her.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Herrera? Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Pleased that we have two proclamations tonight. First one has to do with Fair Housing Month. I'd like to read it, and then I'd like to invite Karen Baer and Norma Jane to come up. Norma's here. I saw Karen. Proclamation. Whereas this year marks the 47th anniversary of the passage of the Fair Housing Act of 1968, which sought to eliminate discrimination in housing opportunities and to affirmatively further housing choices for all Americans. And whereas illegal barriers to equal opportunity in housing, no matter how subtle, diminish the rights of all. And whereas vigorous local efforts to combat discrimination can be effective, if not more so, than federal or state efforts. And whereas the county's Office of Human Rights is charged with and committed to broadening awareness of fair housing laws through expanded education and enforcement initiatives, especially among our vulnerable populations. Now therefore, I, Michael Lane, Chair of the Legislature, do hereby declare Fair Housing Month in Tompkins County and encourage all agencies, institutions, and individuals, public and private, to take action to end unlawful housing discrimination. In witness whereof, I here and set my hand and affix the seal of Tompkins County on April 7, 2015.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Scott Jones. I'm a real estate agent with Audrey Edelman and Realty USA. I'm also the chair of the Equal Opportunities Committee here in Tompkins County for the board. And appreciate you all acknowledging Fair Housing Month and the importance that has within our community. And we're looking forward to educating others and helping out and kind of continuing on with that throughout the month of April here. So appreciate your...
Thank you. We appreciate the Board of Realtors' efforts here. Karen Baer, please pull the microphone close.
As a partner in this is the Office of the Tompkins County Office of Human Rights, and we celebrate Fair Housing Month all year round, actually all month and all year round. And if you want to get a sense of some of the programming that we'll be doing this month, please visit our website at TompkinsCountyNewYork.gov, Human Rights, and also our Facebook page. If you Google Tompkins County Office of Human Rights, you'll get our Facebook page. Please go there and find out all the activities that are going to be taking place, including trainings and outreach. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. And we appreciate that. We're pleased to have another proclamation tonight, and Fernando de Aragon is here to accept that. Come on up, Fernando. This is a proclamation having to do with Transportation Day. Stand up for Transportation Day. Whereas April 9th, 2015 marks Stand Up for Transportation Day, a National Transportation Infrastructure Day that highlights the critical need to invest in updating our nation's transportation infrastructure. And whereas infrastructure is the collection of physical facilities and that permit businesses and commerce to exist and flourish. It facilitates our daily activities and those that promote our collective engagement in commerce. Despite its importance, the only time we generally think about infrastructure is when it fails or is absent. And whereas it is widely recognized that federal funding for public transportation infrastructure needs to increase, and Congress needs to pass a long-term multimodal transportation bill by March 31, 2015, and whereas the current transportation funding bill, moving ahead for progress in the 21st century, was a two-year bill that authorized $10.6 billion in federal fiscal year 2013 and $10.7 billion in federal fiscal year 2014 for federal transit programs administered by the Federal Transit Administration, MAP 21 also authorized just over $40 billion annually for highway programs administered by the Federal Highway Administration. MAP 21 authorized a variety of programs that address different transportation needs, specified how funds can be used, and set formulas for their distribution. It is the source of monies passed through the New York State Department of Transportation to the Ithaca Tompkins Transportation Council, our metropolitan planning organization, which coordinates planning and prioritization of local transportation projects eligible for federal funding. And whereas MAP 21 did not provide for sufficient dedicated funding for public transit or highways, despite the fact that current dedicated revenues going into the Highway Trust Fund will not fully fund even current levels for public transit or highway projects in future years, current dedicated funding falls far short of what we need to provide a long-term dedicated revenue source to fund the growth of those programs. And whereas MAP 21 law was set to expire September 30, 2014, with congressional action and any new law appearing unlikely in July of 14, Congress extended MAP 21 until May 31st of 2015. Whereas approval of a long-term, sustainable, and reliable transportation funding bill, not another short-term extension, is critical. Whereas Stand Up for Transportation Day will celebrate in small, medium, and large communities across the United States as a day that highlights the critical need for funding transportation infrastructures, both public transportation and highway infrastructure. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, Chair of the Legislature, hereby declare April 9th, 2015, as Stand Up for Transportation Day in Tompkins County, and noting that Tompkins County recognizes that coordinated highway infrastructure and quality public transportation are essential in the daily lives of individuals for the economic prosperity of our country, urging our residents and constituent municipalities to convey this recognition to their federal representatives and their support for increased long-term federal infrastructure investment, and joining with public transportation agencies and businesses across the country to participate in Stand Up for Transportation Day to encourage greater federal funding for public transportation. Witness my hand on April 7th, 2015. That was long, but I think it is important that we bring to mind the fact that how important this is in our daily lives. Fernando? Thank you. Fernando, we appreciate the efforts that our Metropolitan Planning Organization puts into these kind of things and keeping transportation projects at the forefront for us.
Thank you.
Reading that one made me kind of dry. I don't believe we need an executive session tonight, do we, folks? John or Joe? I'm going to go to privilege of floor, and after that I'm going to move to the Economic Development Committee because we have some issues there. But before that, we're going to hear on the presentation. But let's go to privilege the floor for the public tonight. This is the opportunity which members of the public have to come to our legislature meeting and to talk to us about any topic they would like to. We ask that they sign a blue card. I have a number of them tonight, which sets forth the rules for speaking on privilege of the floor. When a person signs the blue card, they're saying that the person is saying that he or she agrees to the three-minute time limit. We will give them 3 minutes, and that will be shown on the screen, at the end of which there'll be an audible signal that will indicate that time is concluded. The person agrees not to raise his or her voice, agrees not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. The person agrees not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. The person says that after 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. And finally, I agree that if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. If anyone's out there hasn't signed a blue card, please feel free to do that and pass it up. First person I have tonight is Victor Tiffany. Please, Victor, if you'd come to the microphone and state your municipality, and we'd be glad to hear from you for 3 minutes.
Sure. Victor Tiffany from Danby. 3 weeks ago, I didn't get to complete my thought about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If this is passed by Congress, it won't matter who citizens vote for. Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, or Green, all public officials will have their hands tied and will not be able to regulate the greedy behavior of foreign corporations. Now, the President is attempting to get this passed through Congress using Fast Track, or Trade Promotion Authority. Fast Track would give Congress, each House of Congress, in a straightforward majority vote, the decision whether to pass these complex trade agreements, again, with an up-and-down vote. No amendments. And I believe Fast Track, therefore, is unconstitutional on two grounds. First of all, any trade agreement that is this complex that would radically transform the United States should go in front of the Senate to be ratified on a two-thirds vote. And the second reason these Fast Track is unconstitutional is because the Commerce Clause of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution makes it very clear Congress has the power to regulate commerce with other nations. And Fast Track would basically hand that authority over to the President. So I asked Joe Simulski, Tom Reed's field director, about that last week in his office, and the best he could come up with as an answer was, well, the Constitution gives the House of Representatives the power to write any rules we want for our behavior. After the smoke cleared, I asked if Tom Reed had made up his mind on Fast Track yet, and Joe told me he had not. So I encouraged the Republicans at this table to contact Tom Reed and discourage him from handing over this kind of massive authority to the executive branch on one hand. If you're watching this online, get a hold of your congressman and tell them no to Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And if you're a Democrat sitting at this table, I encourage you to contact the Senators Gillibrand and Schumer and tell them to vote no, that you don't want your hands tied when it comes to regulating the behavior of foreign corporations operating in this country. Now, in 2 weeks, I'm going to come back and describe the chapter on the investment state dispute settlement. That's part of the TPP. And I strongly encourage legislators to go out to the stores that afternoon and purchase to wear for that meeting some adult diapers, because what I'm going to tell you is going to cause some of you to crap your pants. Thank you.
Next we have Frank Proto, and after that, Teresa Ault. Frank Proto, former legislator, Tompkins County. Welcome back.
Good evening. Nice to see you too, all of you. And Mr. Morey, congratulations. What I'm not here to talk about tonight is the Universal Fund, although some of you, somebody ought to pick up that baton. And the other item is my consumer affairs moment. Somebody ought to go after Time Warner this time around. What I'm here to do tonight is to compliment you and the county. As the former chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee and a member of the Board of Health and on, and also a current member of the Health Planning Council, this may be old news. Perhaps Nathan has already alerted you to it, but the Robert Wood Johnson survey came out, and Tompkins County, once again, since 2010, has ranked in the top five counties for health care in the state of New York. It itemized several individual items, but remember when we did the care transitions a couple of years back? One of the items that we scored very well in are preventable... am I out? Sorry. Congratulations. I will sit down. But I thought it was...
No, you're all right, Frank. I don't think... I didn't hear the thing go off. We're having a little trouble with our time.
Oh, okay. Should I start again?
No. We'll give you another minute.
Anyway, I thought it would be appropriate to compliment Peter, the Health Committee, Frank Krupa, Lisa Holmes, especially. I know we're not supposed to talk about county personnel, but these are people that really stepped up, and the preventable health care stuff with the hospital is very important. The clinicians scored in the 90th percentile. These are clinicians countywide with all of the human service agencies in the county, scored in the 90th percentile nationwide. Nationwide. And if any of you are part of the home care arena, you know that the clinicians are really our first line, and you ought to remember them in next month. Next month is the Kentucky Derby, but the other item is it's National Nurses Month, and I expect Peter to bring a proclamation for that. Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you, Frank. Teresa Ault.
Teresa Ault,
Nancy Metzger.
City of Ithaca, volunteer at the Workers' Center. I took a look at the economic development strategy for Tompkins County. Many business groups participated in creating it, as well as government committees and workforce agencies. Missing are representatives of working people themselves. The Workers' Center was not there. No unions, nothing like that. So, no surprise, several crucial observations were missing. And let me say, the aspirations of the document are great. Create inclusive prosperity, indeed. But the study suggests that highly skilled, highly trained workers are lacking so that employers hire from outside the county. However, the county is full of highly skilled, highly trained workers who are being turned down by local employers, and therefore these high-skilled workers take unskilled jobs, shutting out the less skilled workers for whom those jobs would be a first career step. The report cites education and libraries as a major field that provides many good jobs, indeed, but averages can be misleading in salaries when there are a few very high-paying jobs and many low-paying jobs. The high ones pull the average up. And we know now that in education, much work is being done by highly educated adjuncts and graduate students who can scarcely live on what they're being paid. You've heard testimony in this room recently. Bringing their pay up to what it takes for them to both live and pay off their student loans would be crucial. In the case of TC3, a public institution, the legislature could play a role. The report admits that tourism is a low-wage sector. So why has so much public money gone into promoting growth in tourism? Wouldn't the effort be better spent raising the wages in this industry? That can be done through living wage requirements for subsidies and, in the future, through more realistic minimum wages, which, by the way, could help in agriculture as well. And now, just an individual note, good to support public transportation in the county, but why the recommendation mainly to improve air service? There's a huge need for regional public ground transportation to nearby cities like Corning, Elmira, Cortland, and Syracuse. And I've seen my husband give up gigs, work in the, you know, day jobs in those cities just because he couldn't get there and back in a reasonable time. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Nancy Metzger, then Rit Colucci.
Hi. I guess there's a few of us here tonight. My name is Nancy Metzger. I'm from Danby. And there's a few of us here tonight still upset about the Katy situation, so I think we're going to be speaking to that. I'm still very concerned about Melissa and her situation, of course, but also what really happened there. I know you guys heard the incident, right. Thank you. But anyway, I'm concerned about the house, too. I think that that has to be addressed at some time, and I would like to give up the rest of my time to Melissa, if that's okay. Thanks so much.
I don't know if we actually do it that way. You may as well use up the rest of your time if you want to, Nancy. If someone wants to pass time completely, we'll add that to someone else. But we don't really have a way of you know, keeping track of a minute or something like that. I have Rit Colucci.
Hello, my name is Rit Colucci. I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca, and I'm here because I was asked to come and talk about, again, the incident in Danby, and specifically about just treatment due to police officers and deputy sheriffs and so on and so forth. I spent over 30 years in the New York State juvenile justice system, mostly as a supervisor. And I had very much firsthand knowledge of how folks operate, how the systems operate. And it's the last thing you want to do is stereotype and all cops are bad and all this is that and so on and so forth. But the issue in the facilities was that there were many folks in the facilities who did not do a good job with kids. I would assume that the same might be true in the police department or in the sheriff department, where some folks don't do a good job at their job either. What I'd just like to say is that I think we need to take a real hard look at the police department and the sheriff's department in terms of how they're run, in terms of the management, in terms of what happens with that. You really need to take a look at each individual situation individually, look at who's involved with it, look at what happened. I just said a minute ago, you know, don't stereotype, but it just does seem a little bit like oftentimes things are just swept away. He's a cop or he's a deputy sheriff, and that's okay. But it's not okay. Again, in the facilities, it wasn't okay for people to abuse kids. It's not okay for individuals to abuse people. So, again, my very short message is that I really think we all need to take a look at what happens in these situations and what happens as a result of these situations. If there's an officer who's doing a very poor job, he's got to be held accountable. If there's a deputy sheriff who's doing a very poor job, he should be held accountable. If the management does not an up-to-par job, they ought to be held accountable. It's all about accountability. And in general, I'm not sure I see that happen as significantly as it should. So especially with the climate today, I mean, the entire climate of the nation with the shootings and the beatings and so on and so forth, we really need to take a look at this and try to make it better, because I don't think it's good right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Camilla Doucette.
Thank you for hearing me. I'm Camille Doucet from Danby, and it's also about the Hornbrook incident. I feel like my questions have not been answered. I have heard a lot about the police side. I think they are really trying to be transparent, but I feel like we have not been heard. And I would also like to leave the rest of my time to Melissa Cady.
Same problem there. If you start talking, that's your time. Kathy Russell. Kathy Russell.
Oh, okay, that's me. I'm sorry. I was distracted because of this time.
Please go ahead. Thank you.
My name is Kathy Russell, and I've been involved in one form or another of the Workers' Center since the 80s. My union is the United University Professionals. The Workers' Center is a member of the Coalition for Sustainable Economic Development. And I don't know if that's on your radar, but I'd like to read to you this statement. We are an alliance of environmental groups, social justice organizations, business leaders, labor representatives, faith organizations, and elected officials united in recognition of the inextricable connection between economic development, environmental protection, and social justice. Sometimes we call ourselves CSED, Coalition for Sustainable Economic Development. CSED advocates for public policies that protect the ecosystem as well as the people who live and work here, policies that enrich the community, not just monetarily, but also socially. And they're based on a recognition that all life is intertwined and inherently valuable. We believe we can no longer pursue business as usual. I'd like you to keep that in mind when we think about economic development. It's sometimes just sort of automatic, you know. Business as usual. Let's question that. The problems we face as a community and society are significant. The planet's future health is endangered. Economic inequality is worsening. Racial and ethnic divisions are still being exploited, and the shared visions that bind us together as humans are threatened. So the Workers' Center was involved in the sort of fledgling group of people that ended up as the Coalition for Sustainable Economic Development. We had a press conference today at Renovus. I'm proud to say that Renovus is a living wage employer certified by the Tompkins County Workers' Center. And so we've sort of announced to the community that we exist, and we wanted to recognize your important leadership in the county, of course, as a legislature, by letting you know specifically and being here that the Coalition for Sustainable Economic Development exists. Sustainability is three pillars: social, economic, and environmental. Please look at all of those dimensions when you consider economic development. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Melissa Cady.
Hi, Melissa Cady. I live in Ithaca now.
Melissa, you have 3 minutes, but I will extend you an additional 2 minutes and give you a total of five.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Honestly, I was just reading through the paper, and I want to kind of bring something to the attention, that you guys have decided that there's no, like, further investigation that needs to be done on my house, the Hornbrook standoff. And then Officer Gray saying that they did everything they could to keep my husband alive. His, you know, him being alive at the end of the standoff was the most important thing, according to them, correct? I mean, we've all heard that through the papers, through everything. Well, I happened to come across the answering machine at my house, and I would love to let you listen to two messages. One goes on to state the fact that he needs to be killed, and the other one goes on to state the fact that they believe he's dead. And they were on Wednesday, and it ended Friday. So, like I've said all along, he was dead Wednesday.
David, pick up the phone if you're in there.
Let's listen to the one after.
Hello.
To be killed.
Wednesday, 5:58 p.m.
David, if you can hear me, pick up. Are you there, David?
Did he kill himself? So do you see my point? There needs to be an investigation. My husband's life was not what they were there to do. They weren't there to save him. Because if they were, then why would they be saying these things Wednesday? They thought he was dead Wednesday, just like I told you. There's more to this than is. It's unreal. The things they took into evidence, I mean, I don't even understand how they could have. I called the deputy sheriff, Robinson, myself, and I asked him about the pictures that they showed you guys. He flat out told me the picture of the gun that was on the dryer was staged. So if they're showing you staged pictures, they're putting these in the public for people to look at. So everybody's assuming that's where that gun was found, when it wasn't. It was found under a bunch of debris, because that's the gun my husband supposedly shot himself with. The gun up against the wall. That wall, that it just stands there all by itself with a bunch of shelves, it's not even possible. It's the only wall left in that side of the house. There's no way a gun would still be standing where that gun is at. It's not possible. The gun's upstairs in my hallway. The one most definitely was there. It's the 22. It's always been there. It's always loaded. Because if somebody's going to come up my stairs after my children, you bet I'm killing them. Okay? It's always been there. The other gun in my hallway, there's no bullets in my house for it. I mean, if you go through the papers, I got the same papers you got. I went and requested a FOIL or whatever it's called. Look through the papers. It tells you all the bullets that they found were in the gun cabinet in my attic. I mean, if they will admit to me that they've staged one picture, what about all the rest of them? And how do they get all this evidence out of my bathroom when my bathroom's not even there anymore? I mean, you're all more than welcome to come up there. More than welcome. I just took a vacuum cleaner out of there on Easter, took it to my house and ran it, and blew tear gas all over my house, covered myself in it. I mean, the things in that house are still so covered in tear gas, you can't even touch them. I mean, I understand that my husband should have came out of there completely, but it starts right from the beginning. When Sergeant Van knocked at my door with a warrant, he should have came in. He was there over half an hour, standing at my door. Yes, I shut the door in his face, but I never locked it. And as I did speak with him, I left the door wide open. Him and Hassel, whatever his last name is, were more than welcome to walk into my home if they had a warrant to arrest him, and they should have. When he said the things he said about taking my children and having me arrested, he escalated it. He started the problem. And somebody needs to be held accountable, not just me, not just my kids. You know, we're not the enemies here. You know, we didn't do anything wrong. I mean, yes, my husband did something wrong, but so have all of they. And no one wants to hold him accountable but me. I really, really, really wish that you guys would just take a second look at it and just see what I see. See what everybody else sees. I mean, they messed things up there. I mean, Gwen Wilkinson was there. Why does a district attorney show up on scene? Does it make any sense? Because it doesn't to me. I mean, I've Googled all these people. I mean, I've seen what they've done. I've seen what they've hidden. I mean, Sergeant Lansing, did I say that right? Yeah. Sheriff Lansing, I mean, like with the Amy Cockford thing, that's his son. Where'd he go? He's no longer here. Morocco, he now works for Sergeant Lansing. I mean, you just take dirty and mix it with more dirty, and this is what you get. My house. I mean, seriously, they had Elmira SWAT coming in within a half an hour of the time they showed up at my house. Does that even make sense? I mean, why would Elmira be involved a half an hour after something? I was still in my house at that time. And they already were calling in outside agencies from other counties. It makes no sense. I mean, there's over 150 police for one scared man.
Thank you. We'll come back to you in order. Next,
Thank
we
you.
Have Sherry Cortheis.
Hi, Sherry Cortheis, Ithaca. I'd like to talk to you about the TPP tonight, just a little more information. It will dramatically expand the power of multinational corporations to use closed-door tribunals to challenge and supersede domestic laws, including environmental, labor, health, and other protections. Joseph Stiglitz, Stiglitz says it undermines regulations in sectors like food safety, medicine, intellectual property, rendering governments and the citizens that elect them inept in their ability to meaningfully regulate these sectors. It opens up sovereign countries to unprecedented levels of interference by multinational corporations. They will own us. So I ran across some notes from 2013, and the trade agreement is between Australia, Canada, Japan, and eight other countries. And basically written by GE, Goldman Sachs, Pfizer, but only five of the 29 chapters are related to trade. And it will allow drug companies to increase prices and extend the terms of a patent. So it would restrict buying local, and it would make GMO labeling impermissible and weaken environmental laws and regulations. So, for example, the prescription drugs that we spend a year right now is 300, well, in 2013, it was $300 billion. But without those patents, they would only make $30 billion. So these patents, and it's going to go from 10 years now to 25 years, which is a long time for a drug to be under patent, a really long time. So our prices will go up. And the European counterpart's much worse. But the problem is that what happens is we have no democracy anymore. So the corporations will have that tribunal of people, the ISDS. Anyways, for example, Quebec and the anti-fracking laws to protect the St. Lawrence River. The U.S. company is suing for $250 million to win for special panel for Quebec, and they will have to pay to the U.S., and this will expand under TPP. So if they want to frack, like Victor said, in New York State, but we've said no, they can come and frack. And they can also do what they did to Melissa's house to anybody they want. I don't know what happened in that incident, and I'm still very concerned also about it. And I think an investigation would probably help the community a lot. So, but thank you for your time.
Thank you, Fernando de Aragon.
Hello again. I just wanted, this is Fernando de Aragon. I direct the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council and live in the city of Ithaca. I just wanted to take a second to speak in support of the economic development strategy you're going to be considering a little later. I'm part of the Economic Development Collaborative that meets regularly, group of staff and elected officials and citizens that TCAD brings together for consideration of different programs and economic development initiatives, and I think Martha uses us well in developing the plan and going through different drafts and considering the different strategies that are in it. So I support that project and that program and the plan that you're going to be considering, and hope you can support it also. Thank you.
Thank you, Fernando. Tom Cianni has indicated he'd like to give his 3 minutes to Melissa Cady.
Hi again. Melissa Cady, resident of Ithaca. The other things I wanted to say were, first of all, the pictures. I mean, I have the same pictures you guys all got. The beer cans everywhere. They've obviously made it out to look like that my husband was drunk and you know, obviously you all know he was an alcoholic. It's a given. 3 DUIs. But I talked with the coroner, pathologist, whatever you want to call it. His, whatever it's called, toxicology report came back, nicotine. The only thing in his system. So them portraying the fact that he was sitting there in my hallway getting drunk and waiting for them to show up. I mean, he only had nicotine in his system. I don't know why the final autopsy report isn't out. I've called myself. I've called the coroner. I've called the pathologist. They just give me a runaround telling me that it generally takes about this long, that they could be doing other testing for cancers, things like that, which obviously no one cares if he had cancer, if he shot himself. So when that does come out, I would love for you all to read it as well as I want to read it, because I still have questions of where his body was found, where the gun was found, all those type of things, because they haven't answered it. Like I was saying, the things they took into evidence, they say they took pill bottles that were in Dave's name. Well, I don't understand how they could have, since I was just at my house, and his medications are at my house still right now. He was on gabapentin and propranolol, which was for anxiety. They both sit at my house. So what pill bottles they have, I would really love to know. And I would also love to know how they got them, because they would have been in my bathroom. And where Dave's body was found, there was a shelf right beside it. It would have been on that shelf. That shelf is not there. There's nothing in there. The only thing left in my bathroom is a medicine cabinet. My tub, the toilet, it's all gone. But they found all these things in my bathroom. I mean, it makes no sense to me. The pictures that you've all seen, they don't tamper with evidence. Well, when you look at the one picture, there's a bathtub next to what supposedly is a washer or a dryer. It states it's in a basement. It's not a basement. That's my bathroom. And if the tub is there in the picture, why isn't the tub in my bathroom now? I mean, it makes no sense to me. And I mean, I understand that you've heard what they've said, but you have to see what I've seen. I mean, you have to actually see the destruction. I mean, the legs are broke off my table. I mean, my chairs are broken in pieces. I mean, my cupboards are off the walls. I mean, the destruction that they have done up there is unreal. I mean, it's just plain out real. I mean, you stand on one side of my house, you can see my basement, my dining room, my kids' bedroom, and my attic. Just by standing outside. And then you turn your face and you look, and there's water bottles and pizza boxes and Sub wrappers. What do they eat? But if they could eat in my driveway, but they couldn't walk in my house to get my husband. You know, they turned the electric off. They had to go physically to my house, up to the window, take the meter off the wall of my living room. But they couldn't walk in the door? I mean, it makes no sense at all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sophie Zappala.
My name is Sophie Zappala, and I'm a resident of West Hill in the light of the most egregious use of police force and anti-terrorist tactics against Denby resident David Cady that resulted in victim's death and destruction of the entire home. I here respectfully demand that an independent investigation is mandated by the Tompkins legislature and or district attorney to get to the bottom of what went wrong, who bears the responsibility so that justice can be served. Police would not police itself. Their lessons learned as presented during the last meeting have no value and serve to justify their action. We need to overcome the constraints of the blue line to learn the truth. For the sake of time, I will focus on the issue of training of all of those who were in command and participated in the military-style assault on Denby residents and Mr. Cady. As part of the in-depth investigation, we must review their records, training they took, who trained them, when, and where. During the Bush administration, the Director of Homeland Security, Chertoff, mandated that American police forces be trained by Israeli groups in crowd control, counterterrorism, and intelligence gathering. Since that time, thousands upon thousands of our law enforcement have been trained by those who violate human rights of Palestinian civilians in the illegally occupied Palestine, and for whom killings of civilians, children, torture, home demolitions, and group punishments are as normal as going to work is for us. In the last decade, and since this training program started, shootings of unarmed civilians has gone up 500%. Now, the Ferguson police chief was trained in Israel. Attacks on legal political protests by police have become a scandal, and huge stockpiles of ammunition and military heavy weaponry have been distributed to law enforcement groups in every region of America, both local and federally controlled. State SWAT teams, by definition, and those were the SWAT teams that actually from two states that were they use most violent tactics against the residents. All have been trained by the Israeli police, military, or Mossad, either in Israel or here. Law enforcement protocols have been rewritten with help of the Israeli consultants. Israeli organized large conferences for our law enforcement take place routinely all over the country. Israeli police has permanent precincts in order to accommodate this cooperation in all major cities in U.S., including the Big Apple. Terror, or fake terror, has become a big business for weapons and military equipment industry. There is a direct link between the above-described trend of militarization of our police and the Danby tragedy. The independent investigation must uncover those details. Then, as a community, we must take steps to reverse that trend and ensure that anti-terrorist methods that are used routinely against the Palestinian civilians in violation of international law and human rights are never again applied against us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Joanne Sepola-Dennis.
Good evening, legislature.
Good evening.
In San Francisco last week, Chief Greg Scher fired 7 police officers because he found racist texts that were homophobic, and he fired them. That's what a really good leader does. But in Tompkins County, we're subjected to a man who thinks it's perfectly fine to hire, keep, and protect homophobic, racist cops like Stephen Morocco, like Jeremy Van, who was arrested the other day, and like Sergeant Van, who went to Melissa Cady's house. This legislature must accept responsibility for allowing Sheriff Lansing to stay as long as he has. And for over a year, we've been asking you to remove him as the threat that he is from this community. And you have sat in silence time and time again. And it's your fault that Mr. Gavitz died 7 months ago at the hands of the Tompkins County Jail. And it's your fault that Sheriff Lansing still is in service and these people continue to work under him. And now David Cady is dead. His children don't have a father. He will never be at their wedding or their graduation. And the young woman behind me is going to face a lifetime of without her husband. And she has to come in here and tell you about it. All of this could have been avoided if you had done your duty, which is first and foremost to protect the public, to create a safe community. I don't feel safe in this community. When black people need the police, they call, they might get a racist. Do you understand what that does to them? Do you understand how maybe Amy Crockford would not want to call the police? Might you understand that because I come and talk about them, that when I get in my car, my wife worries about me because Stephen Morocco might pick me up? And as you know, as a former corrections officer, I'm not really intimidated by him. So he could likely say, well, you know, that skinny little dyke, she needed to be killed because she threatened me.
Yeah, well, let's not make comments about employees.
Let's respect freedom of speech, please.
I'm respecting that. That's
the use of military equipment by the police in Danby was a means of deliberate dehumanization of a human being, David Cady. It was and is unwarranted and frightening. Having spent the first 10 years of adult life traveling with the military, I fully understand the mission is to dehumanize, because it's used in our young people to train them to kill without thought, without compassion for life. But a man who is ill and in need is not a combatant nor a terrorist. Mr. Cady was simply a man with a disease, alcoholism. He was entitled to be saved by the police officers that he employed, and they violated his right to life. And you are just as guilty of that because you keep them, knowing that they are doing this to your community. And then you don't want us to come in here and talk about it.
Your time has expired.
Please, you don't want us to talk about it. And you know what's going to happen? I'm going to keep talking about it. Every single time you hold a meeting, I'm going to come and talk about it.
I have Deborah Sepola-Dennis next. You want to cede your time to Mrs. Cady, Melissa Cady.
Hi again. I'm not really sure how many times I can ask you the same things. I mean, honestly, that's all I'm asking you is to just look into it. See what I see. See what they see. I mean, Sergeant, I'm bad with who's who. Lansing. I mean, you've seen him sit here. I know we're not supposed to talk mean about them, but I mean, seriously, he sat here chonking his gum, tapping his fingers on the desk like he didn't even want to be here, like he didn't even care. I mean, how rude. I mean, really, I understand that his job is as an officer and to, like, kind of not care, but I mean, he's supposed to care. He's supposed to protect all of us. I mean, and like she just said, you know, the fears of living here and walking around knowing what, you know, the things I've said about these people, it scares the crap out of me. I live right down the road from most of them. I mean, I live in Danby, like literally a half a mile from one of the police from Ithaca. I live by Lansing. I live by all of them. I mean, I fear going out in my yard. I mean, I know it sounds weird, but it's not weird. I mean, if I don't stop at the stop sign correctly, or if I don't, you know, 3 seconds, or if I don't, you know, make sure I don't run a red light, I get pulled over by one of these people. I mean, you think they're going to treat me any better than the way they treated my husband? And if my house was down here in town, you and I know both what happened up there wouldn't have happened. It would have never happened. They'd have never done what they did at my house if it was down in town. So now you fear living outside of town? I mean, how is that fair to anyone and anyone who lives outside of town? Because you know as well as I do, 150 cans of tear gas would not have been thrown in the house over there. They wouldn't have drove a rook through the house over there. But they had no problem doing those things at my house. I mean, they didn't just destroy my house. They destroyed everything, all my memories, everything. All my pictures of my children. I mean, everything. I was 19 when I moved in there. My cap and gown from graduation, gone. My wedding dress, gone. My children's first birthday candles, gone. The outfit they wore home from school. I mean, how many times have any of you, you know, sat and looked at those things? Because you love them. You cherish that stuff. I have none of it. Nothing. I had to go buy every single thing that is in this house that I didn't want to move into at $1,350 a month for rent. I mean, really? I have no job, no husband to support me because he was my sole provider. I mean, I have not worked in 15 years. He was my provider. So now here I am trying to afford $1,350, two kids, furniture, a car, all because they didn't go in and get him. He could have gone to some type of rehab. They could have tried to help him, but instead, I buried him. Now I have a $10,000 bill on top of. I mean, it's got to stop, and it's got to stop here. Like, you guys have to do something, because obviously we can't. You gotta. Or someone else is going to be standing here, and it's not going to be me. It's going to be some other poor lady that doesn't have a husband who has kids to raise.
Thank you. I have one other speaker signed up. If anyone else wants to speak, I need a blue card. Pastor Michael Vincent Cray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this meeting. Thank you, members of the county legislature. And thank you for all our fellow and women citizens who have come and expressed their right to speak. It's not enough for me to be at a meeting. And I'd like to know, I'd like each of our representatives to know, and everyone in the room to know, I don't come here as an adversary. I need you to hear that again. I do not come here as an adversary. I come here as somebody who does have a right, and actually with rights come obligations and duties. Not just to pay taxes, not just to put out the garbage on the right days, but to make sure that those who are representing our power have the full weight and support of that power being used correctly. The chairs you're sitting in are not holding you up. The people who elected you are. The people in this room have. Does Mrs. Katie have to cry out loud? It's not enough to have a hearing. Do any of you remember Kitty Genovese? 1 hour. 1 hour. Neighbors heard her scream, yell. She was being raped. Ultimately murdered. No one did a thing. Now, I agree. I don't find anything that Miss Katie, I find everything she said unfounded. Why? Because I taught the kids in my reform school down in Somers, New York, that discovery is finding what's there in the first place. Of course what she said is unfounded, because you've chosen to look the other way. You've chosen not to have any discovery. You've chosen to be silent. Has a vote been taken, as the report says in the paper, there'll be no investigation. The police are only a flagpole on top of a structure and a system that's, you're holding them up. I don't want them raising the white flag, the red flag, the Jolly Rogers, but if they're upholding that flag in the back of the room, then there has to be liberty and justice for all. There has to be investigation for Mrs. Katie and her family now.
Thank you. That's all the speakers I have tonight. We'll move to privilege of the floor for municipal officials. I see in the back of the room Mayor Myrick. Are you here to talk to us tonight, Mayor?
I am, but under the community outreach program.
Oh, you're here for that particular thing? Well, you're welcome to come talk to us about the city if you want for a couple of minutes. You don't have to. Mayor Savanti Myrick from the City of Ithaca.
The City of Ithaca. Still standing. Thank you.
Glad to hear that.
Sure, I could give you just an update about some of the latest happenings. Spring means a few things for us. We are doing our spring cleaning. We've been towing cars at a pretty big clip here. So we're trying to get the word out that we will be doing spring cleaning over the next 2 weeks, and that if you see one of those signs show up on your streets, move your cars and don't come back until the signs go away. We're also seeing, as the ground thaws, water main breaks throughout the city. In fact, last night our crews worked through the night until 6 a.m. to try and repair breaks on York Street. So as those break, we are not only repairing them, but we're also insulating all of our water mains. So if folks hear about that, please do report all breaks to us. What else is happening this spring? We have a new, this might be of interest to our county legislators, particularly in the city, in time for the spring party season, we've started a new noise ordinance that was just adopted by council last month. We'll begin enforcing it next month. So especially in our student-heavy neighborhoods on East Hill and South Hill, we have a new ordinance that will actually be enforced using sound decibel meters. So decibel meters that read how loud a party is, so that we have an objective standard that we can enforce instead of what we've done, which is police use their own subjective standard. And what I came here to talk about tonight, so thank you for having us, I believe it's come to just about every committee of the legislature, is the community outreach worker. So that is a bit further down the agenda, but I got to tell you that the Common Council and all the staff have been thrilled about the response it's received at the committee level so far, and Ari and I are here to answer any questions you may have once you reach that part of the agenda.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll get to it. We'll try to move it up a little ways on the agenda.
Thank you, Chair. Thank
you. Privilege of the floor for legislators. Any of us want to speak? Carol Chalk.
I was going to ask Savante to tell us about the city comprehensive plan. I believe there are a series of meetings coming up, and then I have something.
Yes, we are having 6 meetings over the next month. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but if you go online, either to the City of Ithaca's Facebook page, the City of Ithaca's homepage, you'll see the schedule for meetings that we are actually holding in every neighborhood in the city over the next 3 or 4 months. We hope that our city comprehensive plan will come to a vote this summer.
Mike Sigler.
I still have a question for the mayor. Like, if I wanted to have coffee with you or something, when could I do that?
That's a good question. I'm glad you asked. Tomorrow morning from 9 to 11, Chief Barber and I will be at Dunkin' Donuts, which I think was very brave of the chief to choose Dunkin' Donuts. I did not choose Dunkin' Donuts.
Which Dunkin' Donuts?
The one on Elmira Road. Then every Wednesday for the next 6 Wednesdays. We will be at different coffee shops around the city so that anybody who wants to can come in and have free coffee with us. All the coffee shops have donated free coffee, but you have to talk to us as part of the requirement. And ask us any questions and level any criticisms. This is actually something that we picked up from the Syracuse Police Department, where they do coffee with the chief. And Chief Barber really liked that, but he said he'd only do it if I did it with him. So it's coffee with the mayor and the chief.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yes, thank you.
Carol?
Thank you. While we're on a somber note, I just wanted to let people know that you'll remember our esteemed colleague and former chair of the legislature, Stu Stein, who's no longer with us. There's been a very dedicated committee of people putting together a memorial service. The family has continued to have health issues, and so it's taken much longer than anybody anticipated. But there will, in fact, be a memorial service, actually a celebration, a community celebration of the life of Stu Stein. And if there's anybody in our community history who deserves a community celebration, he epitomizes that. On Sunday, May 3rd, the doors will be, it'll be up at the Statler Auditorium at Cornell, which is very kindly offered to provide that. Sunday, May 3rd, the program itself will be from 4 to 5, and the doors will be open from starting at 2:30.
No, the program's at 2:30.
Oh, this isn't entirely clear. Okay, program of invited speakers. You're right, the lines don't come out on the email. Okay, you might want to break up the lines there. 2:30 to 4 is the program of invited speakers, and there will be a reception from 4 to 5. Thank you. And there'll you can RSVP if you would like. They'd appreciate some RSVPs. You don't have to. There is a website, www.forevermist.com/Stu Stein. All one word, Stu Stein. So thank you to the kind folks who have been putting this together, among them Martha Armstrong, Tom Knipe, our own Tom Knipe, and a bunch of other people in the community.
Thanks, Carol. Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to, we had a meeting last night in Lansing about the pilot with the Cayuga Power Plant, and I wanted to thank Joe and Mike Stamm and Jay from assessment for all being there. I thought they all handled it very professionally. I mean, it's obviously an issue with some tension there. Don't really know why about the pilot there was so much tension, but there is, and they, I thought, handled it well. I thought the meeting went off pretty well, so thank you for doing that.
Others wish to speak? Julie Kiefer.
Thank you. Before I forget it, I would ask that our minutes include the formal statement about the Coalition for Sustainable Economic Development, which was read, I believe, into. I'd like to see that in the minutes. I was in connection with that. They said they had a press conference, I believe, at Renova's new headquarters, which are the old Babcock buildings on West Hill, which have been totally refurbished and will have all their energy come from renewables, which is appropriate for Renova's to do. So I thought that that was part of the story and worth mentioning. Teresa Ault spoke to us, and the information that she and
Kathy Russell,
the other gentleman whose name escapes me now, I'm getting old, gave us about fast track and the
Victor Tiffany,
yes. Neither of them mentioned that DSA has a program on public access. Each week it deals with issues of interest to the community. And the one that's, I think, going on right now while we're here deals with fast track and TPP. Fortunately, it gets repeated during the week at various times. But they're active in that, too. So what I thought I was going to talk about, and the only thing I intended to mention was that Cornell University is not the only entity celebrating 150 years this year. There is the longest running news magazine in the country, which is also 150 years old this year, and that's The Nation. These days, I think many people think of The Nation as a political rag that stirs up controversy, covers topics that not everybody wants to have covered. But it has, in addition to that front part of it, it also has always had a back part, which is a cultural part. They have book reviews, movie reviews, they print poetry. And over many years, 150 years, they have published writing by so many famous people. Theodore Dreiser, H.L. Mencken, W.E. Du Bois, James Baldwin, Kurt Vonnegut, and they continue to do that. So it's a very good magazine, in my opinion. It always makes me stop and think about things, and I really enjoy the cultural part in the back. And I wanted to give what other people call is a shout-out. I just want to mention The Nation magazine is 150 years old, too, and it should be celebrated. Thanks.
Anyone else? Kathy Luce Herrera.
Streets Alive, May 5th. You can look at Streets Alive, Ithaca.com, and they also need volunteers. We have a ball. Bring your chalk or whatever. You get to do whatever you want. It's a blast. Okay. Well, I bet I'll see a bunch of y'all there. Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay. We're going to go on to our special presentation. We're going to need to put down the screen, so we're going to wait for a second, and then we're going to turn it over to Martha Armstrong to talk about the Tompkins County Economic Development Strategy. Will Burbank's going to introduce.
Thank you, Mike. So I just wanted to say a few words. As you know, for 2 years I was chair of the Economic Development Committee of this body, and so we were involved with this process of, as Martha will explain in detail, of developing this revised economic strategy. I hope Martha will talk a little bit about the many groups that were involved. I think that it wasn't completely accurate what we heard a little earlier. I think there really truly was an attempt to reach out. But certainly, Martha came back to our committee numerous times. On April of 2014, we took part in a vision and a values exercise, which sort of sets up the sort of the basic objectives of what this revision would be. That August, we did a preliminary draft. In October, we had an in-depth discussion about the vision statement, especially focusing on the aspirations and challenges of lower income workers. And in January, we reviewed the final draft of the strategy. In March, we voted to recommend the resolution to accept, and that is what we will be doing tonight. Now, it's been available for some time, and I, as you may recall, encourage many of you to read it, because this truly is our the strategy that we have basically asked TC to develop on our behalf. Many counties have their own economic development planners. We do not. We look to TCAD to perform that function. So we are, very much invested in what they come. I think they've come up with a document that touches with many, many different important points. But Martha's going to walk us through the details. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Will. You can hear me, right?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Martha, adjust it any way you want to. I just put them together.
But you need to be in front of it, or you're not going to be heard.
And do I need to be in front of both of them, or should I just pick one?
I just put them there so you could make sure you would be heard.
Okay, I'm going to pick this one. Here we go. So as Will mentioned, this is a updated economic development strategy for the county. We prepared the first one in the late 90s. That was a 1999 strategy, and then we did an update in 2006. This time we took a fresh look at our economic strengths and challenges. We looked at the data. We gathered input. We renewed our strategic approach to sustainable growth and economic progress. So let's see. I've got to get going here. Here we go. So first, I just want to say we're going to look at an overview of the document, and I'm sure you all read through the entire document in your package in the last week. At least hopefully you had a chance to look through it a little bit, and I'll give you an overview here. And we go through the introduction, the vision and values statements, which are really core to how we operate in this economic development world here in Tompkins County. We've developed three high-level goals, two strategies, and then we'll wrap up with a little bit about implementation and some conclusions. And that, by the way, is the cover of the 2006 economic development strategy. We don't have a new one yet for this one because we haven't published it yet, awaiting your acceptance before we do that work. I do want to say that I overlooked mentioning the meeting with some union leadership and the worker center leadership, Pete Myers, in this list. So I apologize to Teresa for that and to you all. And we also have a union seat on the TCAD board. So we have Mike Tilarski with us. He actually served on the planning committee for this for TCAD. And he and another local labor leader, and then I met with the Borg Warner about a couple things, but we did also talk about the vision for the economy from his perspective when we met. So, and a number of other, many other organizations, which, you know, when I started working on this a couple of years ago, really the Economic Development Collaborative, which Fernandez sits on, was who directed me and said, you need to go out and spend time looking broadly, engage a lot of different perspectives in the county before you get going. So we did. So first, just sort of framing an economic development strategy. There's public and private investment that goes into an economic development strategy. There's business development, retention, and expansion that we create through our economic development strategy. And, of course, job creation and workforce development are really core for our local residents in particular, and trying to work towards career paths. I'd say it's a very strong theme of this particular economic development strategy. I want to do a quick overview of the economy. There are about 2,600 businesses in Tompkins County. There are 70,000 jobs. That number, there's different ways you can get numbers of how many people are employed here. This one includes everybody who has a job here. So that means if you're a student who works on the Cornell campus and you walk backwards one day a week giving a tour, you're counted as a job. So there's different ways of counting, but I'd say there's about 50,000 kind of full-time, regular, available for unemployment insurance type jobs, and then there's another 20,000 jobs, many of which are actually those student jobs and some other kind of contract types. There's a $7 billion gross regional output, according to IMPLAN in 2009, and those divide about half and half between our traded sectors and our local sectors. So traded sectors are industries that are selling their goods and services through trade. They're selling them regionally, they're selling them nationally, often globally from here. Of those, of course, education services is the big one, and their college degrees are their major product. And then the next largest sector is our manufacturing and high-tech sector. We make very conventional things like transmission components. Of course, if you talk to Borg Warner, they make really innovative conventional things. And but we also do things that are nanoscale, microscale, that go into electronics, that keep the image on your phone from turning, and communication to cell towers working, And also things like Ithaca Beer is part of our manufacturing sector, another really neat firm that's been doing well. I also want to include in our traded sectors, smaller pieces are utilities, visitors and tourists sector that was mentioned earlier, mining, primarily that's salt, and agriculture, says fish and forestry, but really that's mostly agriculture and mostly dairy. Our local sectors then is sort of that other half of economic activity. They're selling to local consumers and real estate, government, including our public schools, and the health and social services sectors are the largest ones there. Real estate, I think, is largely driven by having a lot of real estate for student housing. It's probably a little larger than some other communities might see. So what is an economic development strategy? Well, it's kind of a three-legged stool where we have a partnership between local governments, community institutions, and the private sector to increase quality job opportunities for local people, to strengthen the tax base, and to improve the quality of life. We used a planning horizon of about 10 years, but really this will be aiming to guide us over the next 5-6 years to 2020. Our vision statement. Sorry, I'm just going to flip my notes here. Keep up with it. Okay, so first and foremost, I would say that everyone we spoke to in looking for a vision statement emphasized that an inclusive economy where every person can attain the skills leading to fulfilling careers and a high quality of life was really important across the board to every group. That inclusive economy theme came up in one way or another very strongly. In our vision, of course, we wanted to address the business community as an economic development strategy, and we're looking for a business climate where we have innovative ideas, entrepreneurs, and resources combining to create that kind of dynamic and thriving business community that's going to have a positive and sort of virtuous self-propelling cycles here. And when we look at the public sector, we have a vision of municipalities welcoming and fostering business investments, and part of that is really for the municipalities to have a vision of what they want and then really helping that the private sector come in and make the investments in a welcoming and smooth, transparent way to get that vision. And also under the public sector, although sometimes it's kind of quasi-public or really a controlled monopoly, water and sewer, usually public, transportation, energy, broadband, these infrastructure are really important that they be operating well in order to support our private sector investments. And here we strive to do that in our planned development focus areas, you know, building on our planning department's work. Hallmarks of success are going to be that diverse and growing economy that's offering good-paying jobs and career paths to people and investment opportunities for business and developers. Of course, we want a safe, healthy community with vibrant cultural resources, a thriving region that reflects the commitments of investing locally and protecting our natural environment. And all these things should come together to create an outstanding international reputation where people want to live, work, play, visit, and invest here. And I want to reinforce that economic development is really a place-based activity. We're trying to create a great place. The value statement, again, starting on kind of the upper right, create inclusive prosperity, really important, came through loud and clear with every group I met with. And these values should underlie our behaviors and our decision-making as we do our economic development work. We want to be enhancing the quality of life. We want to be collaborative and transparent so that we are... You know, people know what we're doing and how we're doing it. We want to leverage the innovation here. That's not only, of course, at Cornell's deep thinking, but among our people here who are pretty creative. Supporting sustained economic vitality rather than kind of boom or bust or somebody who's going to just take off and go somewhere else, someone who's really committed to this area, entrepreneurs that are committed to the area. And finally, we want to retain wealth locally and not just have all the wealth that we are creating scooching out of the community. And we do that in many ways. Through investment in our workforce and as well as investments in the community.
directly. So there are three goals in this economic development strategy. The first one is around strategically investing in community infrastructure and district development to attract private investment, developing the labor market so that the aspirations and qualifications of the workforce are aligned with the employment opportunities that are here, and then finally strengthening and expanding our key sectors, because it's the business sectors, the employers who are creating those jobs that we are hoping to have here. Then I'll just go through each of those with a little bit more on the objectives, but not too much detail. Again, looking at... Yes, please.
When I go out to fill my car with gas...
I can't hear you.
Peter, use your microphone, please.
When I buy a car or go out and fill my car with gas, that's not money that's being kept locally. Is that correct?
That's correct. That money is going out of the community.
Okay.
So there's stuff that we make here and buy here. So maybe if we have a farmer who's growing eggs here and selling them here, that's really local. But a lot of the consumer purchases that we do, the money's going out of here. If you go to any store on the commons or down on the strip or up at the mall and you buy stuff, most of that stuff is made somewhere else, whether it's building materials or your car or your gas, and that money is going out. So what we need are companies that also bring money in so that we can buy that money that's right. going to go back out. But we also
there's nothing you can do about that, because if you need a car, you got it, that money has to leave the community, right?
That's right.
Okay.
But, to the extent of being able to keep some of that wealth here locally by supporting local entrepreneurs who are going to keep the money here, or by having companies that take an interest in the area, and invest locally and invest in their workforce, because that workforce then has skills that they're able to keep using here to generate wealth.
Why don't we go ahead and let Martha finish, and then we'll take questions.
Okay. So goal A, let's see, we're looking at working on basic infrastructure, and that does include ground transportation. There was a comment about that earlier. Certainly ground transportation is an important part of that. We do feature the air service for a particular reason. And workforce housing, very key on our sort of community infrastructure, particularly going forward as baby boomers retire and continue living in their homes. We have some people who are here and are going to be replacing those workers, but we are really short on workers, and I don't know how much longer we can keep expecting our workforce to commute in. So housing is a high priority among that infrastructure. Second objective is around refining our land use and municipal development processes. Again, those are already happening in many of the communities, and this strategy encourages that to keep happening so we can really have a good system in place for development and getting to that vision through our investments. Third, supporting our major development projects and districts, and that would be such as the redevelopment of the Emerson site is really a prime example of that. That's going to be really coming together of the municipalities that are involved, of economic development tools that we have, and of many private sector workers all coming together to support that very complex kind of project, but also supporting other areas like a waterfront, the airport, tech park area, some of the businesses up in that area, et cetera. And then finally, and this one is maybe sort of easy to say, and it's probably going to be one of the tough challenges here, but achieving progress towards our housing and business development goals in a manner that's compatible with the county's goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And we are committed to working with the county on working out how we can do that, how we can bring the many stakeholders and moving parts that are involved with that together as we move forward. Goal B focuses, goal A was really focusing on kind of infrastructure. Goal B focuses on people in the labor market. We're looking at three objectives. First one is around improving access to better labor market information, both for people who are job seeking, for students at schools and their counselors, and also for businesses themselves to better understand what's going on in the labor market and how they could be interacting better with it. Objective 2 is fostering greater engagement of employers in workforce development. And we work with the Workforce Investment Board in particular as an economic development agency to really try to engage the employers more in understanding and figuring out how we can all work together to improve the workforce development system. And finally, strengthening that workforce development system to have greater capacity, because we certainly have lots of demand for workforce development activities, and we don't always have the resources to fulfill all that demand as best as would be best for our economy. The third goal is for strengthening, expanding, and diversifying our key sectors to foster job creation. This is sort of the holy grail, I think, a lot of times for economic development agencies. We really want to see that job creation. Around here, as I think I said earlier, of course, higher education is the largest sector. Sometimes someone will say, well, you can't really do economic development with the university, the colleges, they take care of themselves. But that's not completely true. We do help with financing and have done so around dormitory housing, also around some of the larger infrastructure projects on the campuses. And then there's many of the indirect sort of economic development support around workforce development, air service, tech transfer, opportunities for trailing spouses of recruits, and that kind of, and having a really vibrant town for the students and for the people who work there. The next three sectors, manufacturing, the tech sectors, and food and beverage production, these are, we have very specific targets for employment growth or stabilization, depending, and for creation of more companies in these sectors. And then we move to the visitors and tourism sector and the agriculture sectors. Both of those have separate strategies being prepared. One is prepared by the Tourism Board, and the other, the Ag and Farmland Protection Board, have specific longer strategies for those sectors, but we do certainly provide a overview of those within the ED strategy. Okay. We have two strategies for achieving these goals. First one is developing an integrated and proactive approach to community-wide economic development leadership. And the second is conducting an economic development effort that offers a comprehensive set of outstanding programs that effectively meet customers' needs. So the first one, I'd like to say it really builds on our 2006 economic development strategy, where we formalized the economic development collaborative and brought together a kind of nuts and bolts leadership group that would really learn how to complement each other's work, leverage each other's work, and have a place where we're regularly discussing economic development and activities that may be important to undertake, you know, as things change in the economic environment. So we'd like to elevate that, to engage more strongly in leadership, both here within the county and at the state and even federal levels. We would like to see leadership involved in really helping that vision come to fruition in creating a transparent, welcoming environment for development projects, in ensuring implementation of the priority economic development activities, exploring and articulating policy positions on critical issues, and stepping beyond just engaging the Economic Development Collaborative, but also bringing in our elected leaders more strongly. Certainly, many of you do participate in economic development leadership, but we'd like to see that strengthened, strengthen our voices up to the state level, for instance, and to the federal level, and also engage our business leaders more strongly in economic development leadership. And finally, leadership's role is to constantly be demonstrating and communicating the value of our economic development programs. Second strategy is conducting our economic development efforts in a comprehensive way with excellent programs and to be effectively meeting the needs of the customers. Of course, we want to continue to deliver the kind of conventional economic development programs like revolving loan funds, tax abatements, technical assistance to businesses, that kind of activity. We also see that we need to be devoting additional resources, as I mentioned earlier, to workforce development. And this is really going to be key as we're losing a very skilled and large group of people known as baby boomers. As they start to move out of the market, we're really having a lot of challenges among the upcoming workforce and to get them trained and to get them on board. This is going to be a big kind of rapid change going on for many industries. We want to foster a dynamic entrepreneurship ecosystem that's rich with resources for entrepreneurship. We're starting to see that as very exciting and hope to see that continue to grow and see more young companies thriving here. And finally, creating economic development programs that respond to specific opportunities. And those might be things related to high tech. We've created special financial instruments for pre-revenue companies. We're looking at the food sector as that's becoming an opportunity, we think, to really grow the food sector here. So those kind of opportunities we'll keep looking for and want to bring best practices to all that work. All right, so nearing the end here. Sorry, as far as implementation, we'll be, once the ED strategy is accepted here, we'll be moving towards launch, and that will mean making a nice document kind of like this that we can hand out far and wide and meet with Rotaries and different communities around the county, work with TCOG and other places where we can spread the word about what's going on with economic development. We'll be, of course, trying to optimize our public and private investments because resources are scarce and we want to target them to our top economic development efforts. We will be working to cherish this region, which we love, most people here love, and protecting the natural resources and the cultural communities that we have here that we want to protect as we're doing this. And, of course, we will want to be transparent in evaluating the success of our programs and communicating that and our other activities to the community as we go forward. Our strategies will get us to the goals, and our goals should get us to our vision. So finally, in conclusion, we have high aspirations, inclusive prosperity, a thriving business community, and a high level of leadership and collaboration. We should recognize that the area around us is facing significant challenges economically. We are a little bright spot, but we shouldn't take that for granted. There's a lot of competition in our region to try to get companies to be in their areas, and there's just a lot of so we need to be strong, and I think we also need to engage the region with us because if the whole region doesn't lift, we're not going to lift. I think there's a limited amount that we can do without engaging the communities around us. And we'll take action on all the things that I spoke about earlier. But I will say I think the top thing is really leadership. We face some very serious challenges coming forward. We have some very difficult topics. We have a lot of stakeholders to engage in an ethical, respectful conversations to be well-informed and knowledgeable as we make decisions and as we move forward. And so I really think you folks and other leaders in the community, be they business leaders or leaders of our nonprofits, we're going to have our work cut out for us to move these things forward. That's it. Thank you. And I hope we will accept this, of course, and also commit, or not commit, we decided to pledge. We're going to do a little word change. Pledge to participation in the economic development strategy. Thank you for your attention.
Well presented. Let's have some questions for Martha. Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. Great to see you, Martha. And I want to say it's a terrific presentation and how much I appreciate the work of you and the TCAD, having served on the IDA and on the Workforce Investment Board. I'm aware of the tremendous scope of the work that TCAD does. And I did appreciate the comments made by some of the speakers under privilege of the floor with regard to what I think of as inclusion, and I really appreciated their notion of sustainable economic development. I'm going to support this economic development strategy, and I want to briefly just say why. I think it's maybe not perfect in that, like when someone considers who does it benefit when I fill up my tank of gas. Well, there's actually a worker there, whether it's a convenience store or whether it's someone that in the old-fashioned way comes out and greets you at the pump. There is a worker there. And if that worker can afford to live in Tompkins County, they do benefit from us. If they can't afford to live in Tompkins County, though, it's a problem, not just to the environment, because they've got to find a way to get back and forth. They may not drive. And if they were wealthy enough, they could afford a hybrid or an electric vehicle. But the fact is, one way or another, whether it's public transit or some way, whether they live in Tompkins County or not, they've got to get to work. And they benefit from our economic development strategy. The fact that it may not be as broad-based as I would like in terms of sustainability is something that I think we can look forward to seeing continue to evolve. And by that I mean, in the 12 years I've been on the legislature, I've seen under Mike Stam's support and with Martha's support and many others, I've seen an evolution of the economic development strategy to be more transparent and to be more inclusive. And it's only with the pressure from people like Teresa and folks at the Worker Center that we're going to continue to see an inclusion of concerns of what I consider to be true economic development, which involves the people, you can call them at the bottom or however you want to. Not everybody in Tompkins County is creative class. Some people work for an hourly wage. Some people have got to work two or three jobs. Those are the people that, if we price them out of Tompkins County, as Martha said, we're not going to be able to count on people in commuting all the time. And it is embarrassing to have somebody that's a PhD working at a convenience store. It's also a waste of resources. We need to focus on that. And I think that increasingly folks at the TCAD and folks involved with planning the economic development strategy have done that. I applaud the efforts of the Worker Center to influence this. And certainly I'm going to continue to try to influence it. But I want to say it's a terrific strategy, and I think that the tremendous progress has been made. There's a reason we stand head and shoulders above other communities in our region, and it has to do with, to a large part, it has to do with our economic development strategy. So I completely support this, despite my worries about labor not always being consulted as much as I would like. We're doing a good job at moving toward that, and that's why I'm supporting this. And hey, you can say what you want to. We're not perfect, but we do our best, and I think this is a good example of that. I didn't have a question for you. Did you notice that? Oh, I know. I can say, don't you agree?
Yes, thank you.
I'm sorry. Whose hand was up over here? Peter?
I wonder if you've ever looked into this question. It just occurred to me while I was listening. The way I would ask the question is, what fraction of our jobs are leavable, namely could be snatched away by somebody? And when I was thinking about it in my head, I was thinking practically none. I mean, if you add together Wegmans and Cornell University and the public sector, the teachers and the hospitals and so forth, you know, there are companies that move because they get a better offer elsewhere. And that seems to me, if I neglect, you know, there's also the effect that you lose jobs because the economy collapses, but assuming that that's not going to happen. Have you any idea what fraction of our jobs could be lured away elsewhere?
I'd say the most vulnerable area is the manufacturing and high tech on that pie chart there. About 18% of our jobs.
Yeah, they could be, right.
Because we look at Emerson Power Transmission, and they did decide to move slowly that production elsewhere, and then they took part of it back to St. Louis. You know, the last 300 or so jobs went to St. Louis about 5-6 years ago, I'm not sure. So that's probably the area that's most vulnerable. Now, some of those jobs, particularly some of the high-tech ones, where there is a relationship to technology at Cornell or something like that, or there would be some connection that way. But that's, I'd say, the vulnerable area.
Thank you.
Mike Sigler. Mike, you need to use your microphone.
I was just wondering if in the education sector, if there's some concern that Cornell's going to start shifting more and more down to New York City. I mean, I know we've talked about that. So.
I think there's no question that the education sector is facing challenges. I personally have not heard that Cornell's going to have enough real estate down in New York City to move much of the campus down there. I think there's a pretty solid investment here that's going to stay here. I can't give you the crystal ball, but you know, they don't have anywhere near the real estate down there in a very expensive place to have real estate that they have here, and the amount of research that can happen here. And in fact, as we've thought about the technology companies that might actually start down at the New York City campus, you know, they may find when they actually want to go to production that it's cheaper to be maybe up here, and if they still want to have a relationship with Cornell, we would hope to leverage some of that to maybe be interested to be up here next to the big campus and have some lower costs as far as real estate and labor up here as opposed to being right in the city. But we don't know. We'll see how it evolves. We're hopeful.
Earl Chock.
Yeah, while we're asking who we're most worried about losing, I just want to say that one of the things that I think that TCAD has done well to change its approach over the last decade has been and the approach to growing home-based businesses into something bigger, and it sounds very different at the end of my time on the Economic Development Committee than the beginning of my time on that in recent history. Yes, if you give somebody a job, I mean, Burger King and McDonald's give people jobs, but the profits go out of the community. So to the extent that we have businesses that grow in our community and are conscious of doing business here, I think that's it serves us well. I'm going to save some of my remarks for discussion on the resolution itself, but my question is, you referred along the way, it was just before you had a slide that was strategy one. I don't know if you need to go back there, but you referred to your customers. Can you tell me who you consider your customers?
Yeah, that was for strategy two, which was around economic development services and specifically really trying to have best practices in economic development. And those customers would be companies that are being targeted for economic development support. They would be primarily companies that are selling their goods or services outside the county, so they are bringing wealth into the county, but also companies like, say, the Lansing Market, where there was really a need for there to be a market, or the downtown density program, which is really serves a different kind of economic development of trying to keep development in the heart of the city. So the customers would be people who can take advantage of the economic development services and be creating wealth and jobs here in the county.
Jim Dennis.
First of all, thank you, Martha, for the report and the whole group of you over there. And, you know, I get from this a couple of things. One, there's a shortage of housing, affordable, and any other kind in the community. And until that gap is filled, we're going to have a very difficult time doing some of the things that we need to do here. I think there's another problem that we have developers who come to this community and actually they are not able to stand up to the public beating they take many, many times. And so they're unwilling to do those kinds of things necessary to help, especially in the housing areas that we desperately need in the community. And until that atmosphere changes or at least has some minimalization to it, we're going to continue to have the same kind of problems. But I thank you for pointing out all the good things we're doing. And I think, you know, it's all the things you talk about and the TCAD does are totally valuable to the community, and I appreciate your work.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate this. I guess I've got a couple more questions. Leslin and Dooley.
Martha, I always look at things, no surprise here, with an eye for how we're addressing the issue of diversity and inclusion. And it doesn't stand out to me in here, especially around the workforce development piece of it. So I'm hoping that there's some insight that you can share with me on how the committee talked about that and see it as part of our economic development strategy plan.
I would say that the part of the strategy, the goal around workforce development is definitely an area of looking at having better skills training, diversity, opportunity, better HR at different organizations to be more engaging around diversity. We have worked with the Workforce Investment Board to actually work with employers and try to help them see how to be more diverse in their workforce, how to actually have a plan around diversity. I do certainly recognize that it is a challenge because there is certainly a cultural bias, which we're seeing in all sorts of ways in this country and here in this community, unfortunately. And that one of the challenges around workforce that's coming up is that this big group of baby boomers, which happens to be bigger in Tompkins County than even nationally, I mean, it's a big cohort, that group is retiring soon. That group was, at least in Tompkins County, a primarily white group, a very well-educated group, and they have filled a lot of jobs. And as we're coming in now, we have a chart in the appendices in the ED strategy. There's a chart that shows race by age and looks at the diversification by age. And in the city of Ithaca in particular, but even across the county, all across the county, in the rural areas also, there's much greater diversity, especially among the young people. We look at children, we look at what's happening in the school districts, what's happening among our 20s and even into our 30-year-olds now. We're just having a great deal more diversity, and hopefully that, from my perspective, just within itself, will start to become more comfortable for people in general. But it does present some challenges for, I think, school districts, employers, trainers who are not used to having multiple cultural experiences, not used to saying, how do we educate girls, how do we educate children of different ethnicities who are coming from different family experiences? How do we get everybody to reach their capacity, their best capacities, and be part of the economy in a full way? Because we have to engage everyone. We in this area do not have the luxury to say we don't want to engage everybody. We're going to need everybody. We need everybody to be functioning well. We need to get the school district's graduation rate working for everybody. There's certainly been efforts to do that, but I think the ED strategy is very clear that we need to be clearly engaged on that, that that's a specific issue that we need to elevate in our workforce investment, and especially the youth programs right now. I hope we'll be seeing more of that. Julia, more youth work.
Absolutely. Julia, we can't hear you, but you can come to the microphone.
Sorry, I'm going to pick on Julia because she's here. She's my labor person. We're working on workforce together.
So absolutely, in terms of our outreach efforts with our youth programs, whether we're talking about the summer youth programs or the Workforce Investment Act youth programs, we do a lot of outreach across the entire community. We're always striving to increase our outreach into communities of color, making sure that we're geographically diverse, that we are attempting to engage all parts of the sector. And I just want to say one thing about what you said, Martha, about that we can't afford not to. And we have a moral imperative, and we have an economic imperative in this community. Obviously, the moral imperative is around ensuring that we don't leave a single person behind. And the economic imperative is we do not have a large enough workforce in this community to meet the needs of the employers. And we have to have every single person, young, old, re-engaged in the workforce, or engaged and re-engaged in the workforce. So young, old, black, white, Hispanic, So we have both a moral and an economic imperative, and we're committed to making sure that that happens and not leaving a single person behind.
Thank you. I appreciate the response, and I'm hoping that there'll be much more conversation, because there's no secret that what's trending in terms of our demographics, whether it has to do with race and ethnicity or it has to do with age, is going to be changing significantly. I'm looking at this as 2025. Between 2025 and 2050, we are going to see a real significant change in what people look like who are here and who make up our workforce. So I'm hoping there'll be much more in-depth conversation around this, and especially around the economic imperative, because there's a serious business case for why we need to make sure that we address that issue and address those challenges before they get even bigger. I have a few more questions, Mike. You should know me by now. I never ask one. Martha, under the vision, this is just for clarification. All persons, under the vision, there was a statement that all persons who work full-time can achieve a livable income. It's part of the vision of 2025. And I wonder if there was a definition of what a livable income was.
We very decidedly chose not to pick the AFCU livable wage. Mm-hmm. There was a great deal of discussion on my board and at the Tompkins County Economic Development Committee, and well, those were probably the main places we had a great deal of conversation about how should that be defined. And the reality is that for a family, for a person with two dependent children who's maybe a single parent, a livable income is going to be higher than the AFCU living wage. For an individual who might be sharing housing, maybe it will be lower. There's also other components to livability which have to do with the expense side rather than just the income. And that, I think, is really where housing comes in to be a big play here. If we look at the counties around us and the housing costs in this county, basically it takes you $2 an hour more to be able to afford the housing here than if you worked and lived in Cortland or Tioga or any of the counties around us. So there's two sides to that equation. We agreed that we wanted to be aspirational, that we wanted people to be able to, through a career of training, maybe not when they have their entry-level job, but as they become trained and have a career path, that they are able to move into being self-sufficient and living independently, self-sufficient within whatever their family configuration is, and that for person to person, whether they live in Groton or live in downtown Ithaca or live in different places, that livable income might look different. So it is certainly aspirational that people can be self-sufficient and can get into a career path where they have the capabilities to earn enough to live independently in a satisfactory way for them.
Thank you. I have one last question, Mike. Again, it's clarification. Objective B, to foster greater engagement of employees in workforce development. 2.1 has an annual focus group, one each for three different sectors. And I don't know that I've been able to follow what the three different sectors are that you were referring to.
You're in the full text.
I'm in the full text.
Yeah. So, I think our idea was that each year those sectors would be different, that we might pick education and manufacturing and food service one year, and another year we might pick financial services and, you know, something else.
That's fine. I just wanted to know sectors.
Yeah, that we would kind of rotate through different sectors.
I appreciate it. I'll have a few more questions, but I'll talk with you.
I'd be happy to meet with you anytime.
Thank you.
The discussion is really good here. We'd like to go on all night, but I don't think we can. Dooley and then Carol, and then let's wrap this up and see if we can't get to the resolutions about this.
Thank you. Carol asked my strategy 2 question. I was confused about customers also, and I think I understand your answer. Strategy 1, this is on packet page 8 that you handed out. Tactic 1B says ensure implementation of priority economic development activities And I wonder if you could explain to me what is meant by priority there.
So that, you know, over time our priorities will shift and change, and leadership needs to be paying attention to and conveying to the public and doing the analysis of the policies to keep us focused on what the priorities might be. So,
so there can be no simple definition, right?
Yeah, so during the recession, our priority might have really been just trying to get people back to work. Now, as maybe we've come a little bit out of that priority, maybe our focus is more our priority on really having those small entrepreneurs take root here and be able to grow and be job creating. And, you know, we want another home run like Keonix or something here, you know, where we go from one person to 200. So our priorities do shift over time.
Okay. I'm looking at packet page 4 of your handout. And there, under the what is an economic development strategy, it says increase quality job opportunities. And by quality, I assume you mean well-paying, high-paying. Is that right?
Quality, I would say there's a couple of aspects to that. And one is that it's a job opportunity that has a career path. So we have a company up in the tech park who the starting wage is, I don't know exactly what it is, but say it's $10 an hour. It's not what is what might be really a higher paying job. And yet that company is very invested in training people and they can move up to a higher wage. So it's not necessarily the wage, but that there's a good work environment, that there's a commitment to the workforce, that the career paths are there. And even if it's a career path that takes you to another company later, that you have skills that you can build on and, you know, have a good career.
So is that explained in your fuller version? Because if not, it's not the common way of thinking about quality, which is usually dollars.
Uh-huh.
That's a suggestion.
Okay.
Under vision statement on the same page, infrastructure is there just, I think, related to supporting private sector investments. But if you were sitting here and heard that long proclamation about infrastructure that was given to Fernando, infrastructure is important beyond just that. And I'm worried that you're going to focus only on infrastructure that serves business development.
So you mean infrastructure to get people around, like ground transportation? The importance of that.
It helps you live your life, yeah.
Yeah.
Getting from point A to point B. I'm not focusing on airports, but you're focusing
right.
Just on that which supports private sector investment.
Well, and public sector businesses and anybody who's got employees and the ground transportation. But we do certainly have a business angle on it rather than your day-to-day shopping angle. But certainly moving employees to their workplace, whether it's Cornell or Tompkins County or BorgWarner, you know, it could be a nonprofit, a for-profit, or a government employment opportunity.
Well, visiting a shut-in, which is not part of your economic development. Okay.
Right. Our focus is admittedly around sort of business economy rather than household economies.
So what concerns me as a legislator is that we have handed off our economic development strategy to you guys, and you do a good job, but there's more to it than what you're doing, and I don't know how, as a legislature, we're going to deal with that. So,
do you want to add 3 or 4 employees at TCAD? We'd love to do more. I'm serious. We'd love to do more.
Economically develop your own shop.
Well, we're doing that by creating the TCAD Foundation.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
All right. Here's where we are. I know we have some more people would like to speak, but it's approaching 7:30 when we normally take a break. But we've got several staff people here. Some have a long ride home that we'd really like to talk about their resolutions. We have some municipal officials here that are here for a resolution. So I'd really like to move on, if I could, folks. Will, would you, as out of the Economic Development Committee, would you take the resolutions, please?
Thank you. So the first resolution is resolution, I guess it's I, which is
accept and pledge to participate in strategies that will lead to fulfillment, accepting and committing to implementation of the 2015 Tompkins County Economic Development Strategy. And I will so move. That came out of committee, and I'm going to change that.
Second. Seconded by Peter Stein.
And if I could just explain, Mike, Carol called this afternoon and raised a very significant question in terms of that title. As you know, as a legislature, we essentially have the choice to accept, enact, or reject reports that come from various outside bodies. And the first word in this is accept. So I think that was really the intent, that we think it's done a great job and we like much of it. But the language as written and in committee sort of makes that a little unclear, because we are also committing, I think, perhaps more. So I'm going to ask if there would be a suggestion from somebody to move a slight addition, which is to take the language that's in the second resolved, and it would now read, and then I'm talking the title of the resolution. Just please listen to me. I apologize that it's not in front of you. Accept and pledge to participate in strategies that lead to fulfillment of the 2015 Tompkins Economic Development Strategy. So what we've that's mirroring the language down at the bottom. And Dooley, would you be willing to?
I was prepared to move something shorter, which does the same thing, I think.
Okay.
Which would say accepting and committing to participate in implementation.
Okay.
That was in the packet, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I would accept that as friendly.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Is there a second for that amendment? Anybody want to second that amendment?
Sure.
Thank you, Leslie. Any discussion about that? All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Go ahead, Will. Is there discussion on the resolution with the title amendment? Carol Chalk.
Yeah. While there's been a wording change, I asked at the beginning of this whole process, that I was on the committee, and then I actually attended when Martha, you had presented this to your own board, what the process was going to be for coming to the county. Whose plan was this? And I was informed in no uncertain terms that this was really TCAD's plan, and that, oh, well, I guess there'll have to be some kind of process for the county. We'd like you to accept it. And now we're being asked to implement it. And actually, from the time that work first started on this plan, and Martha, you've done an incredible amount of work on this, and, you've followed your process and you've consulted with a lot of people throughout the community. But I think we've heard that it isn't everybody, and that there are people really feeling left out on this. So I was informed at the time that this would be TCAD's plan, and that to the extent that the county has set goals, whether they be living wage goals, environmental goals, other kinds of working conditions, diversity, transparency, local resources, that this would be up to the TCAD's board to set the tone of it. And that concerns me. And if it were a 1 or 2 year plan, maybe we could still be talking about it. But I think we heard tonight that there are folks out there who have been out there for a long time and are saying, you know, we weren't really consulted. And that we live in unconventional times. This plan talks along the way about itself as being, pulled out some words, a conventional plan. It cautions us that we can't reach for wishful thinking, refers to wishful thinking among those who want to push us in the directions that have been very successful for this community in the past and to date, that we not move too quickly towards long-range goals, that we have to move cautiously. And I think we live in times that really need something bolder. You know, we look to cities like Burlington, Vermont, where, you know, they've been quoted to us several times. I know one of the things that I heard from the Burlington, the former economic development director in Burlington, was the ways in which they really went out there to develop the local resources. And I'm concerned that we have a tendency these days to sort of let our customers, instead of being those in the community and those who need the jobs and who are going to be occupying the jobs, and instead of figuring out how we can step up and create entrepreneurs, that we tend to reinforce the notion that we can sit back and lure in external entrepreneurs who are going to take the profits, you know, like the people who provide the jobs to those people at Burger King I mentioned, and take them out of our community. And I don't think we have the luxury of doing that anymore. I think we have to think more boldly than that. And that I hope it's not going to be another 5 years before we start thinking about how to do that, that we figure out a way to call together a process and say, how can we think in unconventional ways about the very unconventional issues of the disparity of wealth that just keeps growing, the environmental degradation that just keeps growing. So I'm not ready to say that we can that we should pass this plan the way it is now without a little more community discussion about it.
Jim Dennis, then Mike Sigler.
I'm going to pass and reserve my raising my hand for a couple of later comments. Go ahead.
I'll be quick. I'll just say I go to a lot of economic development stuff. I mean, whether it be business after hours or chamber government meetings. And I mean, just yesterday at economic development, we're hearing from Rev, and this county is a model. I mean, we can hold up Burlington all we want, but this county is working in a dynamic of this state that I find to be impossible. And yet the people that I talk to who are creating the businesses in this community are frankly amazing. I mean, some of the things that they're doing and shipping out of this state and bringing that money back into this county. I mean, we're not just a bright spot in the state. We're one of the few bright spots in the state. And it really seems that our economic development people have a really good sense of what's going on. I mean, I'm impressed with pretty much everybody they have on the committee. Every time I go to one of these events, I mean, frankly, the nice thing about living here in this county is I go to stuff and people are pretty excited about it. I mean, it's like going to North Carolina or Texas when you go to some of these events where people are excited. They're like, wow, stuff is really happening here. And I go to other communities up in upstate New York. I mean, there are boarded up windows on Main Street. So I don't know. I love this idea. If you don't think we're doing enough, I mean, I really suggest you go out to some of these meetings. I mean, there are a lot of people getting together. I mean, Rev, the presentation yesterday I thought was pretty impressive. I mean, it used to be they just used to set up incubators and try to get people to come. And at Rev, they're actually setting up mentorships. And that, frankly, is very difficult. When I used to talk to the guys up at Cornell, what are the things that are missing? They're missing people. They're missing the CEOs. They've got the ideas. They just need people to take those ideas to market. And that seems to be what our economic development people are trying to do. So I'm proud of our economic development team. So,
are we ready to vote? Dooley?
I wanted to respond to Carol. I don't know if I'm thinking about what you are thinking about or not. I think we do traditional economic development extraordinarily well. I think what we don't do, and haven't figured out how to plan for, is what's happening with the already experienced climate change. And I think what we're going to need to do is have a much bigger focus on regional self-sufficiency. I'm not sure that the usual chain of interconnectedness can continue the way it has. So I think I'm sympathetic to what you're saying, but it doesn't make me not want to support this. It makes me want to work in addition.
Julie, I noticed on your revision that you wanted to correct a date, and hopefully that was the date of the document from January 8th to March 31st.
Yes, I appreciate that. That should be corrected.
Can that be part of that amendment that we put in already?
Yes,
is that
I'm
all right
sorry
with everyone?
I forgot to do that.
All right, thank you. All right, we're ready to vote. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I have one opposed. Thank you. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you. And Carol Chalk, I am happy to meet with you anytime because I think we could solve some of your contextual questions.
Will, you want to move ahead with M&N?
I will. The second one is called designation of Tompkins County as a single workforce development area. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Julie Kiefer.
And I'm actually going to invite Julia up to the microphone. Those who have been on the Economic Development Committee have somewhat some idea what this is all about, but maybe Julia could say just very quickly what we're doing here.
Yes. Effective July 1 of 2015, we have new federal legislation around workforce development. It's the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. It was passed bipartisan, bicameral, through which is unheard of at the federal level. Last summer, the president signed it into law in July of 2014, and we have been in the process of pulling together all of the different activities, resolutions, things that need to happen to prepare us for implementation July 1 of 2015. We're requesting permission to reach out to the governor and the State Department of Labor to request that Tompkins County be again designated as a workforce development area under federal legislation.
Discussion? Are you ready to vote? All those in favor, please.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
And the second is related. This is resolution N, and there was one word correction. It should read abolishing of the Workforce Investment Board under the Workforce Investment Act of 1998 and creation of the Workforce Development Board under the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act of 2014. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Julie Kiefer. Kathy?
Thanks. Just one reassurance that the membership of this will still remain spread out like it does now. For example, will it still have a labor representative
Julie?
In addition to a business community representative?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, there's an increased emphasis on labor representation under the new Innovation and Opportunity Act. So, yes, it still requires 51% private sector, that the boards be business-led and 51% private sector, but there's an increased emphasis on ensuring that 20% of boards have representation from labor and community-based organizations that serve individuals with disabilities and agencies that have knowledge and expertise in serving out-of-school youth.
That's great. Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
How about residency? Are there residency requirements?
Our past bylaws were discussed at length with the county's previous PDEQ committee, and we had come to agreement that up to 5 of the private sector members could be non-county residents, given the fact that the law requires that that individuals who are on the board be an optimum policy-making authority within organizations, that there are certain sectors we need to make sure are represented as really critical sectors that are providing workforce development or jobs to the community. So our previous bylaws had said that up to five of our members, private sector members, could be non-county residents. We have not moved forward on revising the bylaws. We will be bringing the bylaws back to this committee in, I believe our time frame is July, August time frame. Joe and I have been meeting to plan out. We will be bringing the bylaws back to the legislature. We'll be discussing it at the board and executive committee, bring it back to the Economic Development Committee and the legislature so that we can come into compliance around the law and the bylaws, and that will be part of that conversation.
Great. Can I just make a comment to Will and to the committee? I think this is a good example of an opportunity for us to move forward with our strategy and belief that local economy should rule as much as possible. So I think we can move forward on this to try and make it more local wherever that's possible, and I'd appreciate y'all thinking about that as you consider the changes that will be presented and offered by the board of the what's now going to be called Workforce Development Board.
Okay, we're ready to vote. Those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you, Will. We'll come back for a report. But let's go next to, I guess it's going to come out of, is it coming out of budget and capital, or is it coming?
What are you looking for? Are you talking about the outreach
worker?
Yeah, it comes
resolution
out of here, and I have the resolution. I'm ready to go when you are.
All right. Would you please move that resolution?
Okay. Authorizing an appropriation of $20,000 from the contingent fund to support a community outreach worker program in downtown Ithaca, and I will move that.
There's a second by Kathy Luz Herrera.
May I make a comment? There is in the text of the resolution, I believe, in your packet, originally it came out Tompkins County Library. It would be given to the Tompkins County Library, and it would only be for an instant because at the point that the position was created, and we would then have to take the money from the library and give it to Family and Children's, and it would be gone from the library. At the committee and a couple of the committee members were not, I guess they were objecting, but literally did not want to use the word library, and so we moved it to administration. And I would ask you if people would do this to put it back in the library, because I think, and this in deference to Mike, he spent a good deal of time talking to people in the library. The reason this whole thing has come about, one, the mayor was looking for something to do with this person, and we clearly were, because of the problems and troubles we've had at the library. I see no reason why it should not be in the library. It will not affect their budget. It will not affect in a way that the state would hold them that they have to have that $20,000 in again next year. So if I could possibly move the word, delete the word administration and put the word library back in, I would like to.
That's not friendly to the seconder, and when I get a chance, I'd like to make comments about that since I was one of the people on the committee.
So that it would take an amendment, Jim.
Okay, then I would.
Would someone move that amendment?
Can I do that, or someone else has to?
Probably, since you're the mover, probably should be someone else.
I'll move it.
Dan?
Yeah.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion on the amendment. Kathy.
Thank you. In the committee, I'm one of the people that had concerns about it. You know, I'm a city resident. The library is in the city. And my concern is that the wording in the resolution is pretty thorough, and then in the explanation it's pretty thorough. But what it does is say that this outreach worker will be moving around through the area that's designated as this downtown Ithaca area. And it appears to me that there's been a concern that some of these things have happened in the library and around the front of the library. I think that's important, and in no way do I want to diminish any support of this community outreach worker for the library. I'm also cognizant that we have county buildings that are in this area, among them the Office for the Aging, the Human Services Building, a bunch of other areas that are public areas that I would hope will also be supported by this person. And I believe that putting this in the library's budget, whether it's for an instant or anything, sets a precedent that is troubling to me, because the administration is the proper place for it to reside. There are a number of other locations that the county has buildings that we have a concern that will be serviced by or looked out for by this outreach worker. And I believe it's most consistent and that it's most thoughtful to have it go through the administration. I would like to for people to consider and think about how it would be looked at, for example, if we put it in the Health and Human Services Department or if we put it in the Office for the Aging's Department. Would you care? I think it's most consistent, it's most obvious that it should go through the administration. And since it's contingent funds, I would rather it was just in contingent. But I made the compromise at the committee after a lengthy discussion that it go through administration. This is important to me because if you look at the wording, we as county legislators are helping support what is de facto a permanent position that goes into the line item budget. And what we would be doing, even if it was supposedly for a second, is saying that this goes into the library's budget. I don't think it's appropriate. In addition to that, I think that we need to consider carefully these kinds of expenditures, and by putting it in the administrator's budget, it allows the kind of oversight that we expect and are accustomed to. And really, if this does go back to the library's budget, it would lose my vote. I think it sets a precedent that is troubling to me, both as a city resident and as a county legislator. This is a terrific program. I want to support it. I do not want it to be in the library's budget.
Jim Dennis.
Colleagues and Michael, I think it's appropriate at this time to bring the city attorney and the mayor up at the table. They are part and parcel, a part of this, and Amy also. So, and you, they can describe to those of you who are not aware what is going on.
Point of information, can I just clear up where, who the funding agreement is with? Is it still with the city, city and Family and Children's Service?
No, Family and Children's, yes.
44?
Family and Children.
I just want to ask Jim, what's the problem with it being in the administration? Why are you bringing all this to bear? Because the comments I just made, you're trying to refute them.
Right.
Like I don't know what's going on.
I really don't want to argue with you. I think there's
Jim has made a request.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
I think I made credible comments.
Representatives from the cities to speak to this. Is there any objection to that? Dooley, you have an objection to that?
Yes. I think that we have questions about our own budgeting system. I want to hear from the mayor and the city attorney, but not about our internal budgeting.
Thank you.
Well, they're not going to be talking about that.
Right. So
Peter, do you have an objection?
They can address our comments first. We can talk about them.
Yes. I've been listening to the debate. Frankly, I don't think it matters where you put it. Yeah. But there is a question that has opened up that I never thought of before. Namely, who is the supervisor of this person? Who is it that decides where, what areas the person, what areas and when this person looks at various places? So that's my question. But I don't really care what's in the legislation.
I have Leslin's hand up on this.
Unfortunately, I feel like Kathy does. I thought we had made a good faith compromise in committee to have this money stay in administration because essentially it's going to Family and Children's Services to support the position. Am I wrong?
Yeah, right. No, you're right.
So I don't understand why it can't be out of contention through administration why it has to go into the library budget. And I really, sitting here as a city rep, would feel terrible if I have to vote against this for that reason. Well, I thought we made a good faith compromise in committee that this is where it will reside, and I was all prepared to support this. And that doesn't seem like I'm surprised, Jim, that you're actually bringing it up here. I really am.
I apologize, Mike.
All right, I'm going to accede to Jim to invite the mayor and the city attorney up, speak to that. Then we'll come back and we'll discuss. We'll let them speak about the program, answer questions about that, and then we'll come back.
Please use
Thank you, gentlemen, for coming, for being here.
So did you withdraw the amendment?
I'm sorry? I absolutely not withdrawing the amendment. So
they're just going to speak to the amendment?
Yeah, I've just set that aside for now. We've got too many things going on all at once, and I hate keeping these folks over time. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, so thanks for having us back here again. I'll speak to Peter's question first, which is who will supervise the actual worker? The worker will be supervised day to day by Family and Children's Services, but to make sure that they are staying on mission, there will be monthly meetings of a board of folks that are appointed specially to supervise the program. The board will be made up of county folks, city folks, and people from Family and Children's Services.
Thank you.
The original recommendation was that the funding come out of the library budget line, if only because the folks in the library were in discussions with us very, very early on about this outreach worker and how it would benefit their programming. But from the city's perspective, we don't have an opinion on where the money should come.
Any other questions?
May I ask the mayor one question?
Certainly.
Or in both. Would you both describe the scope of what this person is supposed to do? They're not just focused in the library or the commons, but go ahead and talk a little bit about where they are focused.
Well, let's say the eastern boundary would be what we call the tuning fork, so where sort of Seneca Street meets Green Street at the eastern end of the commons. But include the commons and the library. We think those will be particular focuses because that's where a lot of people like to hang out. And then it'll move west all the way to Route 13, to Meadow Street specifically. So everything from the State Street MLK corridor, including Green Street and Seneca.
Okay, anything else? Carol?
So I'm still not quite understanding the mechanism by which our money gets from us to Family and Children's Services. As I read this, this is saying that that we will be entering into a contract with Family and Children's Services for our or a funding agreement with them for our portion of this. And so I'm not understanding where the library even comes into this. Other than that, it was. You know, it was questions around the library that initiated that caused us to initiate the discussions. I certainly support the program, and I'm not understanding what's at issue here with this amendment.
Just with respect to mechanics, it's a contract that we will have with Family and Children's. And if the money came through my department, we're a conduit, we're a means to an end. The money is provided to us, so it comes out of contingency. It comes to county administration. County administration then pays that money over to Family and Children's. So we're basically a conduit. The alternative is that the library served that same conduit role. So the money would come out of a contingent, the contingent account to the library. The library would then extend that money to Family and Children's. So in both cases, that department is just a conduit for money from the county to Family and Children's. So I think in terms of where this began, if you recall, where it began was during the 2015 budget process. And we said at that time, we like the idea, we think it's a good concept, but we want to see the details before we release the money. That's why you put it into the contingent account. It was put into the connection with the library was made at that time. It was made last fall through the budget. And at that time, the logic for that was we wanted to make sure that the coverage area of this program included the Green Street corridor, both sides, because you recall that's been a concern for us in terms of what's occurring right outside the library, what it means to the user levels, and we wanted to make sure that it extended on both sides of Green Street. That's why the money went to the library, so we would have additional leverage to make sure that that boundary got over to that side of the street. So that was the logic that led to that connection last fall as part of the budget process.
I guess I'm still very confused about, if this was a compromise that was worked out in committee, it just seems to me that if we're entering into the agreement with Family and Children's Services, that's where the line would be. So I guess I'm not understanding what the library's oversight role is here, if anybody's in fact suggesting that, and
they
if not
have an oversight
why
role.
It matters what the wording is.
They do not have an oversight role. They are a conduit like administration is a conduit.
So if they don't have a role, why does it matter so much whether this
budget is permanent employee goes in?
I think it matters because the library is the one that has suffered in the area from some of the problems that have been created by individuals in need of this kind of services. The library has done a stellar task of trying to interface with these people. They've had librarians go out and read to people. They've talked to them. They've invited them in. They've tried to get folks to participate in library services. They've been concerned about patrons who've been uncomfortable in certain situations. So when the city and the library began talking about this, this seemed to make a lot of sense. The library doesn't like to have to call the police every time that there's a difficult situation. And this seemed to be a humane and forward-looking way of dealing with this thing. We had a model of it in another community, which was explained to the library about. And so if the library continues to be a player here, then its voice continues to be listened to. This has been discussed at the library board. They're very interested in this. They're very excited about it. They know that they want the library to be opening and welcome to everyone, and they want people, if there are people in need of help, they want people to have the help they need. So that's what this is all about. And that's why I was more than surprised that we had the proposed resolution had been changed in wording, particularly in light of the language that we put in back when we talked about the contingency. And when I was the one that I think sponsored this initially to go into contingency with the understanding that the library was going to be involved in it. So that's the best way I can answer you, Carol.
So, Mike, would it satisfy you to have some wording in here, a whereas, that talks about the library as one of the partners in this program? I don't have any disagreement with you. On the contrary, I agree wholeheartedly, programmatically. This is a fantastic program. It's a great example of the community coming together, the city, the county, the library, together saying, what can we do, and coming up with a creative solution. I think it's great. I'm just not understanding why this is becoming such a big issue when we agree programmatically. They seem to have reached some compromise in committee. So can I suggest a whereas? But maybe Julie can help me on the fly here. Whereas, is there a place in here where it's appropriate to refer to, you know, whereas the library, the Tompkins County, Finger Lakes Library is going to be a partner in this program with a seat on the committee?
Would that satisfy me?
Would
no.
Would that satisfy you? So I guess I'm just not. So what does this do to the library's base budget? Does it have an effect if we put it there?
It builds it up because they would need the capacity to pay this bill, so it would build it up. And we, as we said in committee, if the program doesn't work, if we decide to not fund it in the future, mm-hmm. we would take that target money away from the library.
But then there's a problem, right, for the library, because you can't take money away from the library, or else you don't get the state aid or something like that.
It's a 95% maintenance of effort.
I hate to give this, you know, to increase the library's target and then have them feel in a few years, if we decide to do it differently, that or we want to increase it, that somehow it has to come out of their other program. As a strong supporter of the library, I certainly wouldn't want to inadvertently create that impact.
Mr. Chairman, point of order, what's exactly on the, I've lost track
this,
of what, where
time,
we are.
At this time, we had set aside the amendment while we invited the representatives from the city to speak to us, and if there's any if we're done speaking with them about this, then we will go return to the amendment.
The amendment which puts the library in there, is
correct.
That right? Okay, thank you very much.
Actually, I have a question for them.
Go ahead, Ken.
This is a question y'all can be familiar
with
that I asked at committee. Two questions that come up with this concern from me about the library, and I know it's not your bailiwick, but these are the questions. Is there some kind of a foreboding or a concern that the area would not include the library if the library was not the origin in the budget, in the county's budget, for where this came from? And the other side of that is, if this came from the county administration, would other county agencies located in the area also be considered players? And that goes to what Carol's saying. If you have to be on the committee to be considered a player, then it seems a little contradictory to me, because all the county buildings in the area should be able to have some input into how this outreach worker is being utilized, if my understanding about the county's contribution is correct. Maybe my understanding about the county's contribution isn't correct, but just from y'all's perspective, can you give me an answer to those two questions as much as possible?
Sure. So no matter which line the funding comes from, if the county decides to fund the program, then the library would be an area of focus for the outreach worker. And it would remain an area of focus until the county and the city no longer felt that it needed to be. I mean, as long as the county is concerned about the health and functioning of the library, the outreach worker will pay special attention to it. The same goes for any public buildings that are owned by both the city or the county.
So other public buildings owned by the county would also be players?
Yep, including
whatever that means.
Mental health services, Department of Social Services, City Hall.
Thank you.
And if by players you mean participants?
I don't mean.
if by players your question is getting at who is participating in the steering committee that's overseeing the program, then what I will say is that the program as set out would create a steering committee to oversee the program that comprised of county, city, DIA, and family and children's service representatives. Who those county representatives are up to the county, frankly. So whether that's the library, whether it's mental health or any other arms of the county is really a choice for the county.
Thank you. As outlined, I completely support it, knowing that it'll come from administration. Otherwise, I have some serious issues about what's going on.
Julie, then Jim, and then let's come back to the amendment.
So I had some questions for the city people who are here. We have a whereas. It's our next to the last whereas. It talks about, and also to confirm that funding has been committed to the program by the city. When this was drafted, that hadn't happened. Has it happened now?
Yes.
Could we have appropriate wording to change this to indicate how much the city has committed?
The city has committed $20,000, as promised, and it has happened.
So I don't have wording for that, but I'd like to change that whereas to make that clear. It also says that other funding partners. And are there other funding partners?
The DIA has committed, Downtown Ithaca Alliance, that is, has committed $10,000 as they promised. And for the 2015 year, that sum of
10 from DIA, 20 from city, and we very much hope 20 from county will constitute the full funding for the 2015 year.
Your budget year is calendar year also?
Yep.
Yeah. So
I would look at the fifth whereas. It seems like it's already in there.
Which whereas are you talking about?
Well, if it's already in there, then why is it saying we have to make sure? I don't see the dollar amounts.
In the fifth whereas?
The fifth whereas. Okay, then why is this last whereas saying we don't know it? It I guess maybe most of it can come out then.
What last whereas are you looking at, Julie? I'm not following.
33. I'm sorry, the line 33 through 37, the next to the last whereas, the one we haven't been spending time
Thank
on.
Thank you.
So the whereas that is the subject of the amendment to restore library, I'll speak to that now, too. I don't think I have any other questions for the city people. I think the fact that we don't want to take a chance with the library's target amount and have to reduce it is a strong argument against not having it funnel through the library. But I didn't want it to funnel through the library in any event. I think it needs to funnel through administration, which is how we send money to other entities. I don't know, Joe, whether we're going to have a contract for this or not, are we?
Yes.
So in the contract, will you make sure it has language to ensure that the County Public Library area is in the daily patrolling purview of this outreach worker?
Yes.
If it's in the contract, mm-hmm. then I'm less worried about having it in this resolution. But when will we see the contract? Or will we?
You could see it. I mean, we would have the authority to do that contract. We can bring it back to the committee if you'd like to after that contract has been
Which
drafted.
Committee?
BGO.
Oh, I'm on that. Okay. That would be
All right,
nice.
Let's return. Jim, do you want to comment?
Then
I want
to question
talk about the amendment.
On my ill-fated, unthought-out amendment.
I'm sorry?
I want to call the question on my ill-fated, unthought-out amendment.
All right. Is there a second for calling the question on the amendment? There's a second by Peter Stein. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. Those opposed? Sounds unanimous. All right. Could you restate the amendment, please?
It was changing the word administration to library on line 39.
All those in favor, please raise your hand. That's two. All those opposed. That's everyone else. The amendment fails. We'll proceed to the regular...
The regular motion is now with the word administration, and I believe I had a second to that.
So yes, you do.
Have at it.
Dan Klein.
So this resolution did go through three committees, and it went to government operations last, which I believe, according to our rules, means that our version is the final version. This is the version you have in your packet. However, the changes that were made were not indicated in your version. There are 10 words that were either added or taken out. In my opinion, they're not substantive. They're all, most of them are two and three letters, if that tells you. But I just wanted to make you aware of that. If you want to know, I can tell you what they are and what lines they're on.
Can I just ask, you say they're not that word.
Substantive.
Does that mean you're saying that the meaning of the resolution hasn't been changed in any way?
In my opinion, yes.
Okay.
I'm going to trust that,
Dan. I can take your word for that.
Is that
you look
is
like
that
an honest
satisfaction.
I'm going to trust that as well.
Peter Stein.
I'd like to move the question.
You're calling the question on the...
People want to talk on the program.
Well, we now have the original thing back on the floor. I'd like to vote on it.
I think you have to call. You have to.
Yeah, I think he called the question. Is there a second for calling the question on the resolution? Seconded by Mike Sigler. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. All those opposed. One, two, three, four opposed. That's called. Are we ready to vote on the resolution then?
Could somebody specify whatever happened to the whereas in line 38? Just to clarify for me what the wording is. Is it library administration?
It's administration.
Got me on board.
It's administration, Kathy.
It's unchanged. I'm sorry, the question's been called, so we're going to vote on that. There's a point of information. I guess we could answer a point of information.
A point of information. I want everyone to understand that the word is now administration plus Dan's 10-word change. Okay.
To it.
Short form roll call.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Yay. Thank you all.
Ari, thank you. Cervante, for coming. And
thank you very much.
Look forward to working with you on this.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for allowing me to vote on it.
Thank you.
Sorry, question.
All right, we're going to take 10 minutes, and then we'll come back, and we're going to smoke through the rest of the agenda. Okay, folks, let's proceed. I don't have any report tonight or any appointments, so we'll move right on to report from the county administrator, Joe Mariana.
Let me get my notes. I'll be mercifully brief tonight. Just to remind you, the budget retreat is coming up. It's on the 27th of the month, which is a Monday evening at 5:30. I will just kind of telegraph one thing. It's for the first time in a very long time. There will be a few silver linings under the dark clouds that I always paint for the budget. So there are some things that are kind of going our way as we look forward into 2016 that will play out into the budget. So if that's the enticement to lure you to the budget retreat, then so be it. I'm happy I've said it. Really quickly, state budget passed. Some of the things that were important to us were taken out in the budget process, but will be revisited over the next few months as they conclude their discussions in Albany. I think everybody knows this. It's old news, but I'll say it anyway. The age of criminal responsibility, that issue was pulled, but it may come back and be considered over the next couple of months. Same thing is true with my favorite, the property tax circuit breaker. Was yanked, although it sure looks as if it's going to come back in some form or fashion. The Assembly has its version, which if we had to pick one, we'd probably like it because it decouples the circuit breaker from the tax cap. The Senate and the governor don't have that in their proposals. The Senate likes the idea of rebate checks. So that's their iteration of the governor's plan, and the governor's plan, you're aware of it. So it looks like all three parties have an interest in it, but we won't know how it resolves until probably much later in the session. Everything else, generally, we came out okay. Medicaid is indeed capped, has stayed capped. That's good news for us. It's the thing that used to grow a lot, and it has stopped growing now, so there's a hard cap on it. And in addition to that, the Affordable Care Act has been good to us in Medicaid. We have benefited by some of the savings that have accrued to New York State. Those have been passed on to the county. So if anything, it's hard for me to say this after so many years complaining about Medicaid, but Medicaid will be flat or actually go down a little bit this year and next. FTE aid to the community college, that's how the state gives aid to the community colleges, through a certain amount per student, FTE student. It's up. There's conflicting information on this. It's up by either $75, that's what NYSAC says, or $100 per student, which is what Carl Haynes said. I'd be inclined to trust Carl on this. He's close to it. That looks to be, if it's $75, it looks like about $250,000 of additional aid. If it's $100, it's more like $350. So I think the impact is still in that range. So you know that's not nearly enough to balance their budget for next year. They still have challenges even after this modest increase. CHIPS is the road money. We did okay in CHIPS. It basically flattened out from last year. We were a little worried because last year there was a one-time harsh winter increase, and it looks like the one-time harsh winter increase is a two-time harsh winter increase, so that's been sustained for this year. That's good for our ability to improve roads. On the age of criminal responsibility, they took the programmatic things out, but they left $25 million in the budget so that if they decide to go forward, there's a capacity to cover some of the costs, hopefully all of the costs, that may go along with whatever solution that they come up with on that important issue. I think those are the major points. There's an allocation of the $5 billion windfall surplus. That's the what has become known as the Hunger Games allocation for the regions to compete for $1.5 billion. You're well aware of that. You've heard it from TCAD in a number of reports. So that's going forward, although the impact has been smoothed a bit. Money for the throughway, money for some shared service initiatives. I guess the last thing I would add is I know this is the one that most of you have been waiting for because you've been holding off on buying a big boat, but among the things the legislature approved was a sales tax exemption on yacht sales in excess of $230,000. So if you're waiting for this to be done, it's now enacted, and you'll be sheltered from any yacht costs in excess of $230 beginning, I think, immediately. So for this summer, you're covered on your yacht purchase.
But that's to save jobs in the boat building industry.
Save jobs. That's right. So that's my brief report tonight.
Carol?
Are people supposed to have received last year's property tax rebate checks, which would be 2013?
Yes. So you should have received I thought the municipals had gone out as well. I haven't gotten one. Yeah.
I got one.
Thank you.
Jim got one.
$7 while we're talking about the $230,000 yachts. Thank you.
Do they include Airstreams in there?
Well, there's a general aviation. $20. There actually is a general aviation sales tax exemption as well.
All right. Let's move on. Includes trailers?
Thank you.
Jonathan Wood, county attorney.
I did get a check, but it wasn't for much. I have no report. I do want to acknowledge that Francis Fox, Dr. Fox, who was the president of our Board of Health for many years, passed away recently. And next time when I have more time and I come early, I'll tell everybody the real story of the F.H. Fox's 92 and its history.
We'll look forward to that, Jonathan. Rick Snyder is our director of finance.
Just like to give you an update on the sales tax up through the end of February. In the agenda, I've included the sales tax distribution summary. And I'd like to point out to you that for February, sales tax distributions were up 2.93% compared to last year. If you move to the right-hand column of that chart, you can see that year-to-date distributions for the county's portion total $4,680,751 compared to $4,376,855 in 2014. And this represents an increase of $303,896 year over year, or a 6.94% increase year over year. From a budget perspective, though, we would normally be at around 16.7%, but collections are only compared to budget at 13.9%. So from a budget perspective, we are down by about 2.8%. And that's all I have for tonight, Mike, unless there are questions.
Thank you, Rick. Any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Then let's talk about the consent agenda. Have some advisory board appointments. Out of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee to the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Victor Joran. Out of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee to the Soil and Water Conservation District, Aaron Risto. Out of the Public Safety Committee to the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Jason Leifer. Out of Government Operations Committee to the Library Board of Trustees, Janet Corson Reichert, and the Air Services Board, Michael Stamm. Out of the Economic Development Committee, to the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, Nathan Shinagawa. We also have some resolutions. If anyone wants to discuss them, just ask for them to be off the consent agenda. Resolution A, ID 5361, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under. Resolution B, and that's ID 5482, authorizing supplemental consultant agreement number 12 with CNS Engineers, Inc., for design, bidding, and administrative and part-time construction observation services for the aircraft rescue and firefighting crash, fire, and rescue building. Roof repair at the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution C, authorizing acceptance of a New York State Department of Transportation 2014 Aviation Capital Grant Program grant to accomplish repairs for the aircraft rescue and firefighting crash, fire, rescue building roof, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. That's ID 5483. D, resolution, it's ID 5489, authorizing the Tompkins County Public Library to utilize for library purposes the space formerly occupied by the Finger Lakes Library System within the Tompkins County Library Building. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? By Peter Stein. Is there a second? Seconded by Carol Chalk. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Then we'll proceed next to the Government Operations Committee. Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Give you a quick report, and then we'll go to the resolutions. We received an update on what we generally call the Biggs property from Ed March from planning. So he gave us just some ideas of what they're thinking about. They're not plans. They're just ideas. Some of them involve housing in ways that were different than the original plan and ways that address some of the concerns that some of the residents, some of the nearby residents had. And then we also heard some comments from some of the neighbors, some interesting things, things we hadn't heard before about ideas that they had for what might happen there. So I just want to stress that there's nothing about to happen. I think we're far away from anything happening. It was just kind of an update on some thoughts that planning department was looking into. We had an update from Mike Hall, the airport manager. He said that despite the severity of this winter, the airport was only down for 2 hours since November, and down meant that the runway was was only closed for about 2 hours, which is a big improvement over past winters, and he credits the crew down there for that. He also talked a lot about the ongoing attempts to reverse the decline in passengers at the airport, and he said that they are using federal data from the airline system and analysis by the Cornell Johnson School students. They have identified opportunities to increase the quality of air service and return employments to historic high levels. And they're having face-to-face meetings with senior airline executives to build their case. We had a discussion about the designation of the official newspaper. We took no action on it. I don't know if we will be taking any action, but we gathered some interesting data that Joe got for us. Last year, we spent $8,235 on legal ads, and about $5,000 of that was for the finance department for foreclosure ads and bond anticipation notices and that kind of thing. Talked briefly about parking. The consensus that seems to be emerging is that we're not going to switch any spots around, that we're going to look instead at better enforcement to make sure that the spots that are reserved for certain groups of people are kept reserved. We talked about sparklers, which we'll have a resolution on, and then our next meeting is Tuesday, April 23rd at 3:30.
Questions? Dan, I think you have two resolutions, E and G.
That's right. Okay, so I'd like to move Resolution E, approval of 2015 succession of members of the county legislature to serve in the absence of the chair and vice chair.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Go ahead.
Okay, Resolution G, scheduling a public hearing on proposed local law A of 2015, allowing for sparkling devices to be excluded from the dangerous fireworks definition as permitted by New York State Penal Law Section 405.5b.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslie being Claiborne.
Why did we skip F?
Yeah. Skipped F because it's in a different committee.
That'll be coming up in budget. Discussion? Ready to vote? No, I guess we've got Wilbur Bank. Then Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you. I think Kathy's hand was first. Do you want to go first? Or?
Sure. I love sparklers. I did notice that in one of the whereases, the word devices, I think it was meant to be included. It's right up there. It says sparkling, and it needs to say sparkling devices. And I grew up in Texas where there's fireworks all over the place, so I think that these kind of sparklers that you all are talking about, which aren't the metal core sparklers, are safe enough and that they should be okay here. So I'm going to support this, if I understand it correctly.
Will?
And I'm going to be voting against this because although they may be safe enough, they are not safe. They are not harmless. And part of my concern has to do with the fact that they are perceived, I think, incorrectly as being benign, and they are not. I took the liberty, and with Kathy's help, got into your packets a sheet. On one side is some statistics from the Consumer Product Safety Commission, 2013, that pointed out that sparkling devices actually were the largest category of injuries nationwide for pyrotechnic devices. Now, they don't break out, Kathy, the wooden tip versus metal tip, and you're completely right that I think the metal tip are burn far harder, but the wooden tip are not without their problems. They actually are a greater risk in terms of fire. And that is, I gather, one of the reasons that the Firemen's Association of New York State is opposing this resolution or opposed this when it was brought before, brought into Albany to the legislature. It's an interesting question. Where did this come from? I mean, many in this room like sparklers. We probably have them as a kids, but there wasn't a wide public cry for these devices. This came from industry. New York State has some of the most restrictive laws in the nation in terms of firecrackers, and from my perspective and from an article in the New York Times, this is basically the first step to try to change that. The fire industry would very much like to change the culture in New York State. The sparklers can cause severe burns. They're particularly dangerous for young children. And on the flip side of that sheet with the statistics, I just quickly Googled children with sparklers. And you'll see many cases of children, very, very young children. Again, the perception from parents is, you know, what could be wrong? It doesn't seem like a firecracker. There are things you could do to make it safer. There's one little picture of a parent who, in sort of midway on the left side, you'll see a little girl holding a sparkler in a cup, and that is, I gather, a safer way because you're not have as danger sparks or the hot flame touching your hands. But it's a problem. It's a problem for teenagers. Now, teenagers are fully capable of doing something, but I had not realized it's possible to create what's called a sparkler bomb. This has been done. If you Google it, you'll see YouTubes of kids that have done this, literally lost hands. So they're not safe. They are legal now in New York State, so you can buy them. They'll probably be for sale all over. The question before us is, do we want to set a hearing to allow the sale locally? I do not see a compelling reason to do this. Oh, by the way, it's going to be twice a year. I had wondered, could we do this and at least require the people that are selling it to include safety material? And I had a discussion with Jonathan who said that essentially we could not at the local level make that as a requirement. I will hope that I will be voting this, and I would welcome anybody else to do the same. Thank you.
Mr. Stein?
I certainly do remember sparklers with great fondness, and I never, ever heard of anyone being hurt by it. Do you have any numbers on what the number of people who are harmed by it? And
Peter, in that sheet I gave you, it is midway down. Sparklers are 2,300. For 2013.
In the U.S.?
In the U.S. Those are injuries. Again, that all sparkling devices. And it was the largest category of injuries. Now, you know, whether those are all serious, I don't know. But
are we ready to vote? Julie Kiefer.
Dan, I'm sorry. You said there were some revisions in the resolution.
In the sparkler resolution?
The holding a public hearing one.
I don't think so.
The one
just what Kathy pointed out, that we left the word device out on line 10.
Line 10, yes. And line 13, is it's on recommendation of GO, not budget. So that's a different, another change.
Good. Yep, good catch. Thank you.
And there's some commas which I won't tell you about. But I'll hand it in.
On the resolution to schedule the public hearing, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Aye. Those opposed? One opposed. Anything else, Dan?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Let's move to Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Julie Kiefer is the chair.
Thank you. I guess it's just the resolution that I want to tell you about, except that we had a brief meeting today, which I was too late to be part of, but Carol Chuck handled it. Would you tell the folks what that was, please?
Well, we passed the resolutions that the resolution that's coming to us, the authorizing the public hearing. We also recommended, it got added to the agenda. We recommended adding Will Burbank to the Housing Fund Program Oversight Committee.
Thank you, Carol. So I would like to move Resolution H, authorizing a public hearing on local law, number C of 2015, a local law governing this sale, application, and disposal of waste associated with oil and natural gas exploration and storage activities.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dan Klein.
And actually, Dan Klein should lead the discussion because he really took this on as a serious task. He did a good job.
Discussion? Kathy?
In reading it, I noticed that it's also, it talks about not being allowed to put fracking toxins or residue on roads, which I thought was really foresight, or on public land, or not public land, land, which I thought was really smart because there's potential for that, and it's been done in other areas, and it seeps into the water table, as we all know. So great job.
Yep. Kathy Covert points out that the local law we're talking about is the one that was revised in committee.
Oh.
Carol?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, that will be coming to us. So this is a hearing on it, and the revisions, no, the revisions were not substantive. I have them here. They were, we added future generations. We added the word and the natural environment. We added the word onto. Is that all we did? Oh, wait, there's one more. We changed the words to from effect to have an effect on. But while I have the floor,
go ahead.
Can I just thank Dan for bringing this and remind people that we have an existing local law on brine spreading on our own roads and facilities, and we already have that in effect. A few months after we did, and we engaged in a whole public process at the time that we did this. People spoke in favor of it. And at the time that we did it, a few months later, we learned that other communities had gone further than we had. But having just been through the whole process to create a local law, it didn't seem like the right timing. And then since then, Dan has taken, you know, there's been a lot of experience and a lot of various versions of this that different counties, towns, I don't know about cities, have passed. And Dan took them and sifted through them and worked with Jonathan, I think, and came up with something that I think is clear, simple, elegant. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we welcome comments from the public when this comes to the public hearing.
Julie.
Thank you. The second, the change that you mentioned toward the end under severability, I'm really sorry, I missed my meeting.
That's not on the agenda, Dooley.
That's not on the agenda.
We're just doing the public hearing.
That's right. But I want to call your attention, or I want to ask Jonathan because he's here. Jonathan, I'm assuming that you signed off on the severability wording. And it says, such order or judgment shall not affect, impair, effect, or invalidate. That's what you had originally written. And I did not understand why you would have both affect and effect in there. Aren't they the same thing, said two different ways?
No, they're different.
Well, I did see, I wasn't there when the committee did it, but they showed me it afterwards, and it looked fine.
To affect something is to have an effect on. That's what it was.
Point of order?
Point of order, Dan.
This is not on the agenda that they're discussing right now. This is a resolution that is not on the agenda.
I guess we want to allow the committee to discuss that among itself. We can do that another time, Julie, if you would, please.
So this is not the local law that we're setting a public hearing on. That's what you're saying.
We're setting the public hearing. We are discussing the public hearing right now.
Is it on this local law?
The final version needs to be on the desk 7 days before the public hearing.
So when will we take care of the final version? As a committee? I thought that
if the intent is to adopt it on April 21st, it should be done tonight.
Yes. That's what I thought. So pointing out the changes that were made at committee earlier today, which was to add and the natural environment and onto's, the last change was at the end. And my editorial background says that to affect something is to have an effect on, so that it's redundant. And that's what I was asking about. We don't need both of them.
Yeah, and that was fine. I saw the change, and it was fine.
So which one would you like in there, affect or to have an effect on?
Either one is correct. I mean,
yes,
I think
but we just need one of them.
Julie, which one do you like?
Okay, whichever.
I'll take effect for 200, Alec.
Let's get rid of affect and have an effect on.
It'll be effective then. All right. We'll make an executive decision here.
So now it reads.
Anything else? Any other changes?
Wait, so how will it read? I'm sorry.
Shall not impair, have an effect on, da 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 da.
Is that all right? Last one.
I didn't have a
point of point of information.
Wait a minute, I just want to make sure Leslin's okay with this. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
All right, thank you. Carol?
Yes, Jonathan. Is there a different legal meaning to the words affect and effect, even if it's not in, you know, grammatically different? Or is it apart from the grammatical differences?
All right, folks, come on. Let's not dwell on this grammar.
I don't think it would make a difference, but I do think that Dooley's correction is correct as a matter of English, and it's fine.
Okay. Are we set then? Do we have the revisions that we know what we're going to put in front of the public for the public hearing? All right. On the resolution to schedule the public hearing, all those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else, Julie?
No, except that the next meeting of PEAK is on April 15th, and the agenda hasn't been set yet.
Thank you. Charter review met, and we went through more of the financial procedures section of the charter, and we were brought a complete revision of some parts of that to comply with what we actually do. We've gotten a little away from the charter because of the changes over the years. So that section will be, when it comes to the full legislature, will be one of those that is changed significantly. But basically, you won't think it's changed from what we actually do. We will meet again on May 6th at 3 o'clock here. Any questions I can answer?
Are you talking about the financial policy?
The financial, we went over in charter, the financial procedures. You have a question?
This is not the cash management policy that's on the agenda tonight.
I was giving the report on the charter committee.
Thank you. I'm sorry I confused them.
All right. It's getting late, I know, for everybody. All right, then let's move to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Resolution I, authorize an appropriation from $20,000. Oh, I'm sorry.
We did that one.
We've done that one. J, endorsing state legislation S, Senate 2550 and Assembly 05405, extending existing sales and use tax authority of the County of Tompkins. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Second by Dooley.
We need this. It's $10 million.
Shall we have a roll call on this one?
Sure.
Ready to vote?
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Please announce the vote.
12 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you.
Item K.
Can I just say that it's too bad we have to go through this every 2 years. Once again, the legislation at the state level was not included in the budget, which would have put the counties across the state out of the misery of having to go begging to their legislators every 2 years. Sorry for that tirade, but it really is something.
I think you have to practice more if you're going to call that one a tirade.
That's what you call it.
All right. Go ahead, Jim.
All right. Resolution K. It is a legislative approval of the tentative agreement between Tompkins County and CSA Employees Association Local 1000, AFSCME, FLCIO, Tompkins County, Blue Collar Unit Number 8900-01, and I would move that. With the changes, Dooley made some changes, and I'm going to eliminate those changes on line 20, which should say, from my point of view, whereas on March 30, 2015, the union held a ratification vote of its membership where the contract was approved. Now, therefore, and then delete lines 23, 24, and 25, and move right to 27. It is not in good government to talk about the ratification vote of the union. All our concern should be is that it was ratified. And I don't think it's ever been done in any other resolution I've ever seen, and I would ask you to eliminate that portion of the resolution.
Who's the seconder? Seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. Would that change?
Yep.
Okay. Discussion further?
I didn't quite follow what you said.
I don't want to put a 4-1 vote. I don't want to record the vote.
That's fine.
Right.
I didn't make that up. That was part of the information we were given.
Well, probably should not have been.
Jim, were there other changes that were submitted?
Knock out the word further on line 27 and reduce and delete 23, 24, and 25. That's the one I have. Is that the one you have?
In the fourth whereas?
all the highlighted changes.
On March, where is?
Line 17.
Yeah,
that was fine.
That's okay.
And then line 29 on the next page. I'm just not clear if the committee approved this version.
No, we didn't. Yeah,
line 29.
They're fine. Joe, do you see where it is on? Says will be paid in accordance with fair labor standards.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. Yeah. Just so the legislature knows, these are the specific changes that were exchanged by both sides. So this is a cut and paste.
Right.
This is the contract language that we've exchanged. But I don't see anything in here that is contrary to the intent of those sections.
Are we changing the agreed-upon contract?
No, I think we're okay, Kathy. I think we're okay.
Line 46 is the other one.
Invoked versus enacted.
All right.
Line 46 says civil service law.
Well, I was looking at this one in committee, Jim.
The impasse resolution?
Yeah. Law may be invoked as opposed to enacted.
The law is enacted, but it can be invoked.
Yeah, the law is enacted. You invoked it, right?
It was just a mistake, I think.
Right.
Okay. Good. That's good. All right.
Okay. Then we're voting on it with those changes, then.
Let me just.
Go ahead, Joe.
Let me just say that, and Joe may want to add on, all of you can read the details of it, and this blue-collar unit did a good job. At the table, former personnel commissioner Deb Prado did an excellent job to get these people to agree to this. And it's like any negotiation that any of you ever been involved in. Not everybody gets what they want, but the blue-collar unit was pleased and ratified this, overwhelmingly. And we got out some things that we wanted to get, and they got some things they wanted to get. It's a good deal for them, I think, and it's also a good deal for the county. So.
Kathy, did you have your hand up?
No, not really.
I had my hand. I'm just trying to understand the process here. So you're moving this with Dooley's changes already accepted?
Well, some of them. I knocked out the ones that you accepted.
Yes. Okay. I'm just trying to understand. I'm happy to do it this way. Dooley's an excellent editor, and she often comes to us with these.
I don't want to put that to a vote.
I think we ought to pay her extra to do this with all our resolutions. But
I think we're there.
We often say we have to put it on the floor the way it was and then change it. And I just want to be clear that what we're doing.
Are we ready to vote on the ratification of the contract? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. I think,
We
owe both negotiating teams, those that worked for administration and the county, and also those that worked for the unit itself, the blue-collar people, our round of thanks, because none of these agreements come easily, but it worked out.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. Good work.
Yeah, thank you all for the support of this. I think the unit will be pleased. And let me just mention again the work that Deb Prado did and clearly the county administrator and other people in personnel to put all these things together and make this work. So it was a good experience and a good ending.
Jim, I think you also have Resolution F.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. It's under government operations. But
yes, but it should have been under your committee.
Ah, okay. Adoption of a cash management investment policy, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Luz Herrera. Discussion?
And now here we are. Dooley? Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Dooley Kiefer.
It's a real leadership team here.
Well, I try to stay awake.
So I called our finance director this morning, and Bent is here for a long time with some questions I had. And one of them was the fact that we were removing some local banks from the list of banks we consider to put deposits in, and I saw no reason to take them out. And I believe Mr. Snyder checked with our former finance director, and who said we want to list all of them. If there's always a possibility we'll use them, and there was no reason to take them out. Just because we never use them doesn't mean we might not someday. Am I saying that right?
That's correct.
So that was one change. And the other change, I'm so tired, I don't...
You want me to review them?
Would you tell them the other change, please?
I thought I'd make it easy by passing out to each of you a revised version, which was on your desk. And in this were all the comments and questions that Dooley raised with me. They were all, I would say, friendly and acceptable. There was a lot of hyphens that needed to be closed and periods and smaller things, which we won't spend a lot of time. But the most substantive change was that which she mentioned, where on the, I think it's the next to last page, third to last page, under depositories, where we had removed First National Bank of Dryden, Tioga State Bank, and Community Bank, N.A. We had taken that from the list because we have not had a banking relationship with those banks for 26 years. And so I just thought to remove them. But after Dooley's question was raised, well, this is not really a list of banks of who we do business with. This is a list of banks of who the legislature has authorized us to do business with. I did contact Dave Squires, and he did explain to me that it would be good to keep them on the list in the event that we would like to form a banking relationship with them. So I had no problem with that. And I added them back to the list. The other more substantive change that I did not make, and this is really one that Dooley had asked for.
Oh, I can talk about
that. You
want
to talk about that one?
Yeah,
and then I'll explain why I did not include it.
There was one other that was made. No, I guess it's all editorial. I'm sorry. So the other one that I was thinking about is that since I have not a lot of confidence in rating agencies, but it's all we've got, that maybe as we have in some places in this policy, requiring a high rating from at least two rating agencies, that might be extended to other places where we only require a high rating from one. And Rick explained to me why in some cases that would be unwise or impossible, but it's not out of the question. It would just take a lot of research to make sure it made sense. So I don't want him to spend his time on that kind of thing, although if he has time during the next year to consider it, I would be happy. But that's not a change we're going to make. I just wanted to tell you what I was thinking about.
Okay. So, Jim, then the revisions here, are they acceptable to you?
Yes.
Acceptable to the seconder? Who seconded it? I forgot. Kathy, are they acceptable to you? All right. Ready to vote with those changes? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous also.
May I make one comment or question? Dooley, I would love to speak to you at the end of the meeting to find out what piqued your curiosity in changing these things, and I will do that after the meeting. But that concludes my report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions for Jim before we leave? Go to the next library, the old library committee. The old library committee did meet. We basically discussed the procedures for how we're going to review the three responses we got to the request for proposals. We received them from the Franklin Group in Syracuse, the Travis Hyde Group locally, and from the Cornerstone Group out of Rochester area. All three were, of course, had previously responded to the request for expressions of interest, the REFI. The one that did not respond, did not put in a response to the request for proposals, was the DiPaolo Group. And Mr. DiPaolo apparently, for whatever reasons, decided not to submit. So that will not be continuing. We'll be looking at three of them. The committee would like to have an opportunity to have a presentation from each of the proposers. That would be open to the full legislature, of course, but also to the public, that we could then have it probably meet in this room, have them make the presentation about the proposal that they have in front of us and receive our questions from the legislature, and also give an opportunity for the public to ask questions. We're not looking to open it up for extended discussion, but if there are technical questions or other things the public would like to speak about, we want to give them that opportunity. The legislative staff is working on those dates, and as soon as we get them nailed down, we will let everyone know about them. We want to move this ahead so that it can come to the legislature in June for our recommendation, hopefully before that, as to which one we think you ought to select. But if you want to choose a different one, that's up to you. If you don't want to, if you want to reject them all, you could still do all of that. Can I answer any questions? Carol Chalk.
Yeah. Will you? Is your intention to have that session at a time that it can be taped?
We're going to try to. We're going to be taped. We haven't gotten that far, but we're trying to do it in the evening. Say at 5 o'clock. I think we decided on 5 o'clock. There'll be three separate sessions.
Okay. So since this will come down to a vote, if there's anybody who can't make it on the date that gets picked, it would seem to me it would make sense.
Let's see. Let's see
what we can
do.
Back.
I think that makes sense. Yes.
See it.
Okay. Should we move on to Public Safety Committee?
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I believe
Nathan,
I'm the vice chair.
Nathan Shinagawa was called away. Jim Dennis is vice chair.
And Nate did not leave anything for me. And I believe that whenever the next Public Safety Committee meeting is, Kathy, you might have to remind me. I'm not sure when it is.
April 20th.
April 20th. Okay. That concludes Nathan's report.
Any other members of the committee want to say anything? Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, that's Leslie McBean-Claiborne is the chair.
I can top that, Jim. I don't have a vice chair. They didn't leave any information there. Now, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet in a couple of weeks. We are continuing to discuss and a rollout plan for the results of the climate survey that we received. We certainly had a good presentation from the vendor who we contracted with, and our plan going forward is to figure out how to make sure that all our employees are privy to the information that came out of that, because they had amazing participation in that. We were well pleased with it. So that's what we're continuing to do. That's my report.
Questions for Leslie? Thank you, Leslie. Health and Human Services Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yeah, we had a quiet meeting with, there's three items that I want to discuss briefly, and I hope you'll bear with me for one of them. We had a presentation about the mental health renovation, which we've heard several times, and we approved it. I was a little bit concerned about how it was presented, because the basic reason for that mental health renovation was that the current facility is not safe. There's a security problem, and that's basically why it was changed, and there's a considerable amount of money put into that. But in addition to that, there were several modest changes which made it a more comfortable place to work in. But I think when we presented in public, we because a considerable amount of money that went into that, that we explained that it was really a necessity on our part. There was no way we could keep it from being properly configured. So that was one. We heard a report from our old friend Pat Pryor, who was chairman of the Human Services, what's it called? Commission.
Human Rights Commission.
The Human Rights Commission, which, as you know, is a 15-member group can be distinguished from the Human Rights Office. It has its own its own agenda and its own ends. And she discussed what was going on. It had apparently, before Karen became the chair, it had fallen on hard times, and the commission had maybe two people that were members of it. But at the moment, it's blooming. There's one vacancy, 14 members, and they have two or three applications for that one extra group. And she described what they were doing, and their basic motive is to stay abreast of the community and find out what kinds of problems there are with people who do not get the human rights that they deserve, and to try to bring that to the office to do something about it. And she was very enthusiastic, and apparently the group, she said, is very enthusiastic about getting going. The third thing that I want to talk about is something, and that is one thing that we heard, and that reminded me of a story that I get a lot of pleasure from, so I think I'll tell you the story as well. We had a presentation from the health department, from the head of the health department, about, where is it? What was an exercise that was done for a mass inoculation. Namely, what happens when you find out that there's a very dangerous disease that is communicable in the area, and there are a number of people in it that you believe have not been inoculated against it. And what that means is you have to get the people all together in a place and inoculate them. And so there's a whole process that's been developed to do that, where everybody is going to have an instruction on where to go if they in fact get this call, and people will go there and then get inoculated. And they managed to inoculate 340 participants in over an hour and a half. And it all went very well. They were inoculated with water or something like that. But the
Skittles and M&M's.
Is that right? Oh, they didn't really inoculate them. Huh? They just gave them candy. Okay.
I like that inoculation.
I'd forgotten that. And I guess the reason I made that mistake was the little story that I want to tell, because it reminded me of something that happened when I was young that had a big effect on me. In the family that I grew up in, Brookline, in Massachusetts, the person that had that was the head of the public health department was a friend of the family's, and this event that I'm going to describe took place about two or three years after the end of World War II. And this person that I admired, he was a doctor who went into public health, had been in the Navy and on a small ship during the war, and they happened to. So there aren't many good things that happened in World War II. There are a whole lot of bad things that happened, but one of the really good things that happened in World War II is the discovery or invention of penicillin, which changed public health absolutely enormously. And this doctor, Leon was his name, told me a story of when he was in the Navy in the South Pacific. And his ship that he was a doctor on went to a small island that was not of military significance at the time, and they went there to get refueled or something like that. And he got off the ship and just walking around saw that there's a disease called yaws. I don't know if you've heard of it. We heard of it before. But it's sort of like syphilis. It's a close relative of syphilis, and it permeated the South Pacific at that time. And so what he did was he stayed there for 24 hours, and he had all the guys on the ship to go round up people. It was just full of people with the symptoms of yaws. And he spent 24 hours just inoculating one person after the other that got dragged in. And when the supply of penicillin went out, then he closed up shop. And he told me that that was the high point of his life as a doctor, that he saved more people per hour than he had ever come close to before. So that was my little story that I wanted to tell.
Thank you, Peter.
I have nothing more to report.
Can we move on? We have the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is the chair.
F&I has not met since the last legislature meeting. We will be meeting on April 13th at 3:30 in East Chambers. That's my report.
Thanks, Dave. Questions for Dave?
I have one question. Dave, did the state budget as it is now put together, does that help out in the broadband area at all? Is there anything in there that can help us fill in our blanks?
I got to be honest with you, I don't know at this point in time.
There is broadband money, but we don't know how it's going to be divided up. It may be backbone and not last mile money.
Okay. Julie? Thank you. I didn't know either. I thought maybe you had better info than I did.
Julie?
Dave, I was told by staff that you have agreed to consider a scaffold law resolution.
Yes, I have.
And I want to thank you for that. I'm not sure I can make the meeting, but I hope it goes well.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. Let's go back to economic development. We didn't give you a chance to report.
Well, in response to Dooley's, I would hope that when we do consider, we would consider not only message that I guess all of us have gotten letters from groups that are opposed to the scaffold law, but also from people in labor who may have a different view. So I would hope we would hear from both sides.
Thank you.
The resolution I gave them suggests that there be liability in both directions looked at. It's not all in one direction.
Okay.
Okay. Will, anything else you want to mention out of economic development?
No, I hadn't started, but I was still responding to that. Yes, economic development met yesterday. We passed resolutions related to the sustainable energy program, which will be the subject of a hearing on May 5th. We passed resolutions approving a bunch of tourism grants that will be coming to the ledge for final approval at our next meeting. We heard a presentation from Katie Bergella about the New York Prize program, which is essentially awarding money to do feasibility studies of innovative energy projects, and we're hoping to get money to do a feasibility study for a microgrid up near the airport that would could potentially feed our county buildings, the airport, and a bunch of other things. We heard a presentation from Tom Shriver, who's the director of the REV, which is the new incubator that's down in the old Carey building. They are just going great guns, and it was just really, really exciting. They've got like 20 businesses associated with them. They have a $1 million grant from the Empire State Development Corporation. They're renovating the building. And he sort of ticked over the kinds of workshops that they're doing to basically assist people that have ideas, want to get something in motion, need a place just to get started, and then need support. So it's a very, very exciting program. We also heard from Heather Filiberto from TCAD explaining this competition for the URF, which stands for the Upstate Renewal Fund. Seven regions are going to be competing for one of three $5 million grant awards. That's $5 million for a region, and it would be paid over 5 years, so $1 million a year. It is still a little unclear what exactly will position one well to get this award, but the key word continues to be transformative. They will be coming up with transformative ideas. There will be public information sessions and trying to get those they don't even know yet when they'll be due. At any rate, that was that, and our next meeting is on Monday, May 4th. Are there any questions?
Well, is transformative affected or effected?
Depends how you feel about it.
Joe.
If I could just make a little correction, I think, to the report.
Please do.
By adding a couple of zeros, I think it's $500 million.
Thank you. Yes, what's a few zeros among friends, Joe, at this hour. Thank you. You are correct, Joe.
Any other questions? Dooley?
By any chance, did the man making a presentation on the REV explain where the name comes from?
He did. And, Joe, do you remember? Is anybody,
it's not an acronym. I remember that, but I don't remember.
He pointed out that they were the original REV, and not to be confused with the state's REV, which then reinvented imagining energy, which came afterwards. But they're the original REV.
Yeah, but will it be in your minutes?
You know, I will find that out for you if I can. So.
Thank you.
And speaking of minutes, someone want to move the minutes of March 17th? Dan Klein, seconded by Jim Dennis. Discussion? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. Thank you. Any unfinished business? Is there a motion to adjourn?
No.
I guess not, so we'll keep going. Glenn Morey has moved to adjourn.
Yeah.
Don't blame him. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. All in favor? Opposed? Carried. Thank you all. Good meeting.
Yeah,
good discussions. Thanks to Kathy and Marcia and
all right, Glenn.
Everyone else. Jim Blizzard up in the control room for helping tonight.